Hey, let's start the show.
It's April 19th, 2012. Welcome to This Is Only a Test, the official podcast of Tested.com.
Right.
Look at that fucking squirrel on my bird feeder.
And then suddenly, the Enterprise D's bridge.
I'm Will Smith. Joining me today, as always, Norman Chan. How you doing, Norm?
What was that?
That was something new. That was brought to us by reader, listener.
Bistro Calf.
Bistro Calf. Exactly. I was looking for it on my screen here. Bistro Calf sent this in. Gary requested a dubstep remix of the Tested podcast. Gary, how you doing?
I'm very pleased with that.
Are you satisfied?
New theme music, yes.
I don't know that we're going to stick with that every week. As always, this is an adult podcast for adults only. So if your kids are in the car, turn off the radio now before Gary says something offensive.
I'm not going to say anything offensive.
Good. Okay. We start off last week with something pretty offensive.
That's, we led right into it. So thanks for the dubstep remix of the intro.
Our
audience delivered on that one.
Yeah, the NPR start.
Well, hold on. Now, he got part of the NPR start, but I had to live mix that in.
Technically, he missed one of the chimes.
Two chimes.
You had to live edit one of the chimes back
live
in.
Live mix.
So that was quite a feat of dexterity.
It was a remix of a remix.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very impressive.
Something amazing happened this morning.
But that was great. And if you want that theme music, he's put it on SoundCloud as well. Yeah. So maybe we should post the SoundCloud.
It's on the forums, I think.
Okay.
If not on the forums, it's in the NeoGAF.
I mean, who wouldn't want that?
It's pretty rad. Yeah. I'm going to go jogging to it later tonight.
I think you should consider it as the new theme music. You got to move with the times.
I like our existing theme music a lot. I think that Waffle Stomp did a really nice job with it when he made it for us 2 years ago. It's probably time to talk to him about getting something new made, though.
As the A-Team,
you don't want to change it?
Evolved. They added the synthesizer to the theme music to keep it fresh.
There is, more accurately, is there are the full-length versions of songs.
We have a full-length and a short version.
And then a short version for syndication purposes.
Yeah.
For the length and commercial break.
Well, we ran the long version for the first 6 months, and then I chopped it down to the short version because people said the theme song went on too long.
All right.
But I don't think that theme music says a lot about our brand values, that we're hip, we're edgy, we're where it's at, we're on the cutting edge of the...
We're
on the cutting edge of the popular music scene.
The wub wubs?
That's what the young people are into. That's what they're all listening to.
No, that tells people that we're now 6 months behind. We're chasing.
Sniffing their glue and going to the local hop.
Yeah,
that's what they're listening to.
We got the Inception Bomb and the wub wubs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could be more hip?
Just in case we ever need it, I have it here still.
What?
Just in case.
Oh, the Ewok music? That's only for very special occasions.
Yeah. Yeah, so...
next week's challenge, lyrics. I want lyrics for the original song, not the Wub Wub version.
How Game of Thrones inspired all those various, remixes and different orchestrations of its theme music?
You know...
Maybe we could be similarly viral.
I have to say, the opening credits for Game of Thrones, I just started watching Game of Thrones this
fantastic
last week.
Fantastic credits.
Season one?
The season one one. Okay. The credits change with season two?
They change within the season.
As the story encompasses new areas, the opening credits also evolve to feature those new
areas.
But
what's unfortunate is because the production company that did these credits for season one did such a good job. I don't know if it's the same company. You could tell the animations for the new segments in season two aren't as good.
Oh, I didn't notice a difference.
So is that one of those things that it's like they made a real model and they built up, or it's all CG?
It's all CG. There's actually a really good post about
the making. It's got like a tilt shift kind of effect that they put in there, right?
It's kind of steampunky because it's all gears. As if it was a giant map rising, a 3D map. There is a really good post on this movie the opening credits blog or something.
Yeah.
I'll post a link if it's on the site, of how they actually made that. Because everything, opening credits for movies and TV shows are all contracted out to specialty firms.
Yeah, it's like shorts.
Well, you know what's really crazy is if you pay attention to that opening sequence, Westeros, as it's depicted in the opening credits of the TV show, is actually kind of a Dyson sphere. In that, if you look at the map, when it really pulls out, you see that map is actually curving inward.
The wrong way?
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
And the sphere, that big glowy sphere thing at the center, which is obviously meant to be the sun, as the sun is often depicted in ancient maps.
Right.
Is at the center of it.
pre-Copernicus.
So maybe that's the big mega twist revelation at the end, is that they're all living on a massive Dyson sphere. Hmm.
The website is called Art of the Tidal. It's a really, really good website.
Okay.
And
that stuff started with Fincher and
started long.
Well, Saul Bass and all the way back to Crazy Credits.
Okay. Like, the first one I remember seeing was the Fight Club. That title sequence in Fight Club was where you kind of pull back and it, I don't know. It was,
well, it's not only title sequences, but also the credit sequences, not the scroll.
Yeah.
But right after the final scene of the movie, typically, like in more recent movies like Iron Man or Captain America, they always have a fancy animation with the main
X-Men did that.
Yeah, with the main cast and the directors and the producers. Mm. It's like, instead of doing the title sequence, they'll put it at the end of the movie.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. I thought that the title sequence in Game of Thrones was pretty
very good.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty.
It's very good.
So let's see. You want to jump right into the news? We got a lot of stuff to go down this week. Windows 8. First off, disclaimer: we're recording this on Tuesday because Norm and I are traveling the last half of this week. We're going to Vegas for NAB on Wednesday for National Associated Broadcasters show. Basically, look at cameras and SLRs, and maybe look at some high speed cameras and stuff like that too. And then from there, we're going straight to Portland for the Specialty Coffee Show, which is probably my favorite 4 days of the year, because I'm going to drink a lot of really awesome coffee.
It's a pretty awesome trip. Vegas and Portland for a coffee festival.
Well, we're just in Vegas long enough to be dangerous. Like, we're there for literally 24 hours at the outside.
All you need.
So, I mean, it could be real bad, especially since we're rolling hard into Portland.
Well, not the way you guys roll, because you go there to work. I'm the one that usually kind of keeps up the party side of things. You usually are there editing and being good little schoolboys until midnight, and then you crash out and go to sleep.
Well, this time we're not cutting video until we get back, because we don't have enough crew for that. So like, we'll shoot during the day, and then I
already
go back
have
to the
shot
room.
By the time you're listening to this.
Yeah, the video's already in the can.
Yeah,
let's I'm going to be back in the room,
flight.
Like reading a book, maybe writing a book report.
And Joey and I are going to hit the floor.
Yeah, make us some Portland money, coffee money.
Mm, that's right, food truck money.
Exactly. I'm still living off my the money that I won in Vegas in January.
That. Wow, that's when you tried to pay me for lunch the other day with $100.
You end up with a lot of C notes.
Yeah, the hundos are hard to spend, it turns out.
Well, shrinking, it's a giant wad in your pocket.
Yeah,
it's burning a hole in your pocket.
People always give you when they run the fraud pen on the $100 bill, is basically like, you feel like such a, make you feel guilty.
Oh,
the worst is the
casinos should treat their money with extra chemicals, so when the fraud pen goes over it, it's like they know you won that money.
Yeah, you're like a rainbow.
Yeah, like an explode. You know, oh, that's good.
Yeah,
like
free
that.
Money.
Or the Caesar's money clip or something.
Hey, congratulations on your trip to Vegas, Mr. Witta, is what they should say when you try to pass off that.
That's
100.
Right. That's right.
So Microsoft announced Windows 8. They announced the official name for the next version of Windows.
That sounds like a pretty anticlimactic.
It's less anticlimactic or more anticlimactic than when they officially announced the name for Windows 7. Because back then, there was at least the hope that they would change the name to something else. Windows 7 was always the...
I thought Windows 7 was a good name.
No, it was a good name, but Windows 7 was never the name that people thought it was going to be.
Do you like it better
it
just as numbers,
name.
Or do you like it better when it's like Vista,
they're chasing
Mojave,
somebody.
All these kind of sexy type
I like
names.
Numbers.
Yeah?
I think that these sexy code names are invariably super lame. And if they're not lame at launch, then they're lame by the time the OS is done.
Well,
numbers are arbitrary also.
To be fair, they only ever did it really once, 98. XP kind of. Vista obviously was the super fruity version. But then back to 7.
What does
7.
That mean, super fruity?
Just
that
like
seems
they were
like a little homophobic.
Well, no, right? Not at all.
Colorful.
Just, yeah, okay. They're trying to come up with something more stylistic and evocative rather than just saying this is the new version.
Right. Okay.
At least Windows Vista tied into the name of Windows.
Kind
you see,
of.
You look through a window and see a Vista.
Exactly. I see, like, I thought Vista to me evoked the Bliss wallpaper from Windows XP, like that lovely hill.
Did we talk about that hill?
We talked about it on the Max PC podcast.
The hill's no longer there.
Really?
Yeah, you can go back to where the photographer
took
that photo.
It's in Marin someplace, right?
It's all dead grass.
Yeah, it's unrecognizable now.
Yeah, it's...
Oh, I'm so sad.
But the guy who took that picture made out like a bandit.
Did he get royalties on each one?
No, I think he did pretty good off it. No. I read an article about it recently.
That it's funny because that stuff, like wallpapers and chime sound, like the sound effects.
Yeah.
Well, like, sound effects used to be a big part of Windows.
Yeah.
When Brian Eno did the 95 sound effect. But recently, they're not memorable at all.
Well, and they're not doing, like, there's no startup sound with Windows.
Bottom.
Well, the other one that's interesting, though, is the original Mac sounds. They tracked down the woman who made those for Apple in like 1984 or something. Because a lot of those sounds carried through all the way into OS X, the chime and the bomb sound.
Yeah, what is that like? It's almost like kind of like a wood chime kind of thing when the Mac starts up, right? That's a very kind of iconic Mac sound.
Yeah, I'm trying to get over there and see.
Trying
what
to get to your little soundboard,
my sound control panel here.
Yeah, can you make it make that sound?
I don't know what the startup sound.
A lot of the sounds from the original Mac OS are still in there.
Well, these are a lot of these are updated because the original ones were really.
I don't know if the startup sound is really available as something you can.
That's like an old school Mac. Sound
that's old
they
school
recreated,
Mac.
Created though.
Yeah.
So sue me.
Yeah, what do you think is the most iconic computer sound?
Probably this one right here. Oh no, the most iconic is the
real
Bing.
Computer sound.
No, it's the Bing in Micro
Error,
Windows.
The Error Bing.
Yeah,
when you can't click around any window.
Boom. Yeah, the one that like the modal window pops up and it's all you can do is click the OK button or the OK cancel or abort.
I think you have to play it for me. I don't know. I don't know how that goes.
Not an OS sound, but a computer sound. The most recognizable one is going to be the modem sound. Modem chime.
Yeah, but
that's not really a sound.
What you mean? The screech? Because no one hears that.
Ba-da, ba-da, bum, bum.
No, you're talking about them.
What's he doing?
No. Ba-da, ba-da, bum.
What?
If you search right now, everyone knows that sound. When you dial up modem sound. I know no one hears it now, but it's like a car alarm.
No, I don't know what he's talking about.
Are you kidding me?
When the modem sounds that I hear are the dialing out of the phone number,
and then you go.
That's like 56k modem bullshit. I didn't have any of that.
What's he talking about?
Norm smokes crack.
Yeah,
are you kidding me?
This is weird.
You're not making the right modem sound.
You guys.
I have a fax machine in the other room. We can make modem sounds all day.
That's
long.
Not the right modem sound.
I think the sound that I always remember the most is the Windows startup sound. However it went, I can't remember.
But you remember that much. But the thing about those Windows startup sounds is they evolved so gradually from the Brian Eno one that came out with Windows 95. The 98 one is just a modernized, different version of that same song. And then the XP one is a further update to that. So, like, I think they did them for 95, 98, NT4, ME, 2000, and XP, and then they stopped for Vista.
You know what it used to be as well, not anymore, is the old AOL. Welcome.
Yeah, well,
you've got mail. They did an article on that guy as well, the guy that did that voice.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because they did some computation where it was like the most heard phrase in human history now or something, because, you know, it would. So many people had AOL.
They had that movie.
Yeah,
Tom
inspired,
Hanks and
inspired a movie.
Meg Ryan.
Yeah, yeah, you mean Sleepless in Seattle with email?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a good movie. Yeah. Wait. Not really. There was a really good article series about famous sounds out of, I can't remember who did it. I want to say it was The Guardian, but I don't think that's right. Some English website that I'd never been to before. And they had that. They had the THX noise, which apparently, like, the way, do you know the story of the THX noise?
No.
So it's programmatically created. It's not like somebody's playing a synth or something like that and just layering it over and over again. They basically just fed some source numbers into this big giant program and it spat out a sound.
So robots composing music.
Pretty much. The thing that happened, though, that's weird is they lost the good one. So the one that we've heard all these years that everybody's like, oh, and you know, they blow out Abe Simpson's teeth at the beginning of The Simpsons and all that. That's not the good one. We got the crap one.
Well, because they have changed it over time.
Not that much, though.
We have not had a THX pre-roll video in front of a movie in years.
It's all on DVDs now.
I don't even see it on DVDs.
You see it on... Well,
yeah, you do.
Yeah, you see
on
it on...
Blu-rays, no way.
Never on Blu-rays, but on DVDs you used to see it
I used
a lot.
To like the one with when it broke down, the little engineer
the little
guy jetted in and fixed it.
They had the cow who did the shaking, the sound shaker thing.
Yeah. That was the same guy, the little engineer dude.
Yeah, those were good days. The pre-roll sound.
I do miss that, like the old THX sound, because that's when they would jack up the volume in the theater. That's when you knew.
Oh, yeah.
It's partly why we go see IMAX. I always love the pre-show in front of the IMAX.
The 58 speakers?
Right, when they do like the safari music.
That's kind
of
fun.
And then they should light up different parts of the screen to show like giant perforated screen.
They use a script font too.
And like eight subs in different places. Yeah. And it's like 10,000 DVDs worth of
it is good.
CDs worth of audio.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the script font ruins the whole thing for me.
But that's so, and then it reaches the climax and everyone cheers and lights come up. And
yeah, you can't help yourself but cheer though.
And then you're like, oh, okay, that's the show.
Well, and they do
that's
weird,
what I paid for.
They do some weird subsonic stuff too, where you get like cold chills and shit at different points.
No,
in
it's
that,
not 4D.
Hmm?
I don't think it's 4D.
It's not D-Box.
No.
No. So yeah, Windows 8 SKUs also were announced.
Okay, this is
actually news.
This is relevant to my interest because I will be building a Windows 8 machine.
You're mm-hmm. ready to upgrade that fantastic machine we
this
built.
News was so big.
Ago.
I had a dream about this.
Really?
Yesterday, I was waiting in line.
In the morning or in the night?
No, I dream at night that I was waiting in line for the Windows 8 launch at a CompUSA.
Wow, you need to get a you need to start having more exciting dreams. Yeah. You know, in dreams, you can imagine like anything is possible. You can fight me Superman.
Gary, you can fly.
No. You can go to other alien planets.
Nope, I had a dream that I was waiting in line.
You dreamed that you were standing Windows in line 8, for Windows 8.
At CompUSA, excited.
You need to have a serious talk with your imagination.
The thing that you've forgotten is that this is something that's impossible because CompUSA is gone.
It is gone.
Tiger Dreams the impossible.
Yeah, who?
But again, that's the problem, right? Like, okay, so
world.
In dreams, anything is possible. What can I make happen? I could bring CompUSA back, dude. You could do stuff much more awesome than that.
It's like a Black Friday shopping experience.
You
could
bring dinosaurs back and give them lasers. Not fucking CompUSA.
Windows 8.
Hey man, I miss CompUSA.
Let's bring back something that was shit anyway.
So two SKUs for normal people, basically.
Ooh, okay, that's nice.
This is a significant improvement from the Vista Windows 7 scheme.
Oh, my God, yes.
Because if you recall, back in the Windows XP days, Windows 95.
Basic, standard,
there
ultimate,
was one
professional,
version.
Business, deluxe, home starter, home premium.
Seven versions,
get out
basically,
of here with that bullshit.
For Windows Vista, and I think six for Windows 7.
Yeah.
In the old days with Windows 95, there was basically two versions of the OS. There was Windows 95, which was for people at home, mm-hmm. and then Windows NT, which was for people who connected to a network at work, right?
Right.
Different kernels. Eventually that merged with XP, and there became two versions. The one for people that connect to domains at work, and the one for people that don't connect to domains. And all was right
but
with the
world.
But
then in the age of Vista and 7, remember, we used to make fun of it. Microsoft would have these easy-to-understand charts. It would explain which version is right for you.
It would be a
and
chart.
And it was like looking at fucking a Goodwill Hunting equation or something.
82 cells in one of those charts I remember you looked at.
It was nuts.
So with Vista, they did Goldilocks marketing because they wanted to get an upsell. So they made this ultimate thing that had no purpose, no reason to buy it. It didn't really do anything different except for it combined the stuff that was only in the Office versions, the domain connectivity, with the stuff that
I wanted it ultimate.
Well, of course, it was the best one.
Yeah, you know, idiots that just want to have the sexy black gold
premium
version.
Right. We're all
and it was and what made it ultimate was shit that you don't need, like,
of course,
like
never
arcane language support
power toys
and stuff.
Ever used it.
Shit you would never use.
Varian support.
Right.
That continued with Windows 7. They trimmed it down a little bit, but functionally no better.
No, you get still ultimate, like, home premium.
A home basic.
Home basic.
It was no home premium. It was home basic and home.
There's still home premium in 7.
Okay.
All right. So what are they doing this time?
And then there was a pro and the enterprise. So this time it's very simple. There's Windows 8 and there's Windows 8 Pro.
That's okay. I can probably get my head around that. What's the difference?
Windows 8 is for people who don't connect to domains.
So, okay.
And Windows 8 Pro is for people who do connect to domains or who use full disk encryption.
Now, so when you say connect to domains, what exactly do you mean by that?
You know how when you go to your office, well, you don't have an office, but remember in the old days, well, okay, when you had an office, probably we never did this because at Future we were not particularly savvy about this stuff. But imagine you worked at IBM, okay?
Hey, maybe I could have an exciting dream about that.
Yeah, exactly. Think about all those spreadsheets you could be filing.
Filling out my TPS reports.
Exactly.
Maybe
designing
a new
cover
sheet. Do you even
know
what a TPS report is?
Maybe as I'm going to my break to the break room to get a donut, that's when I start to wake up and I'm like, oh no, why do I always wake up at the best part?
Right before does it have sprinkles?
Oh yeah, that's probably one way.
The lab coats.
This donut is too good to be true. This must be a dream.
Oh,
I have to pinch myself.
When you get a computer at a big company, then basically it's managed by a central IT department. That means that they can put software on it and do things remotely and keep you from browsing porn at work and keep you from installing Chrome. So you have to use IE6 and all sorts of horrible things. In order to do that, they have to connect the machine to the domain. And that connection to the domain says, okay, here are the rules that this machine has to follow. Here are the servers that it can connect to. Here's where you get user accounts for it, because the user accounts don't live locally. They'll live on a centralized server someplace.
Right.
So it's like IT enterprise.
So it's only for IT professionals who are looking to kind of fill up their computers at work that would use that version.
It's really only for specific types of people who are using like servers that connect to Windows domains and all that kind of stuff.
But Joe Public's going to get the regular version.
with a few exceptions, as always.
Uh-oh.
So if you had the Ultimate version or the Pro version of Windows 7, the nice thing is with Windows Vista, the higher up versions weren't necessarily supersets of the features that were in the lower end versions. So like if you got Windows Vista Pro or the Office version, whatever it was called, it didn't have Media Center in it, but it could connect to domains. You couldn't get everything unless you bought the $400 version, which was Ultimate.
And you couldn't convert from one version to another.
You could convert up, but not down.
Not down.
Yeah. With Windows 7, they made it better in that everything was a superset of everything else. So Home Premium is better than Home Basic, and Pro is better than Home, includes all of the features of Home Premium.
Okay.
And Ultimate includes all of the features of Pro and Home Premium and Home Basic. But what they didn't do was fix the upgrade stuff. So if you're trying to do an in-place upgrade, I can't believe we're taking so long to get into this. It's really not that.
Important. You know, everyone's going to be getting Windows at some point.
That's true.
But it sounds like there's not really a lot to know. It just sounds like unless you are involved in like IT professional shit, just get
the basic version, the cheapo. The exception is if you're running Ultimate or Home or Windows 7 Pro right now, you need to buy the Pro version. Because you can't do an in-place – if you want to do an in-place upgrade. So if you want to put the disk in and say, upgrade my computer to Windows 8 from Windows 7 and you're running Ultimate or Pro, you have to have the Pro version.
What?
Because you have to move the upgrade. You can't go from a version that supports domains and the full disk encryption to a version that doesn't support
domains.
Okay,
so if I was an idiot.
So if you were a dumbass, and you're locked in on the dumbass
I bought it just because I liked the shiny black box.
Yep.
Yeah, you're
now. It was a black box for the Ultimate.
Pretty much.
Of course, you always have the nuclear option. You can wipe the machine, start from scratch.
Which you could do with an upgrade.
Which you can do, which you can or do if you're with be an upgrade building or a new have in the past.
Or if you're building a new system from scratch or buying a new system from scratch, this is the version.
Mm-hmm. Buy the basic version.
Yeah.
And of course, people are buying the OEM version from Newegg.
The only other caveat is that if you want remote desktop server on your machine, so if you want to be able to use Microsoft's remote desktop client to connect to that PC remotely, you have to have the Pro version.
Now, do they also have different SKUs between the upgrade version and the from scratch version? Okay. So what would be cheaper?
But here's the thing.
Using the upgrade version to go to Pro or like you said, nuking the system and starting from scratch?
No idea. They haven't
announced
prices yet.
Oh, okay.
The thing I said, well, hold on. I don't remember what I was saying. It was something important. We were talking about
domains, remote desktop.
Oh, yeah, remote desktop. You can replace that with UltraVNC or third-party utilities, so you don't actually need that. And the third-party utilities are generally better than the Microsoft client anyway.
Now, there is a third version of Windows 8 that they announced in their blog, but I don't think they really needed to announce this, and it's what people have been laughing about. It's Windows 8 RT.
Oh, God, what is that?
It's Windows on ARM. So it's the version that's specifically for tablets and embedded devices.
And you can't buy it. It's only sold to OEMs who pre-install it on – as licenses to pre-install tablets and laptops.
My hunch would be that there'll be OEM versions available for that at Newegg as well. But you'll probably buy them – if you buy an ARM motherboard kit, you'll probably have to buy the OS at the same time.
I don't know why they call it Windows RT.
Retweet?
No.
Real
– I thought of something more offensive. But
real taffy? I like taffy. Do you like taffy, Norm? Do you like taffy?
I don't know why they just call it Windows on ARM.
I like Laffy Taffy.
Because ARM is confusing to normal people.
I don't like taffy.
Really?
You don't like Laffy Taffy?
I don't like Laffy Taffy.
I don't like taffy for the same reason I don't like nougat or caramel.
Because it's the candy that was always left over at Halloween.
And it sticks to your teeth.
Caramel's good.
I like caramel. I got some fancy caramels from Fab the other day there in the kitchen.
All right.
Sea salt. They're salty.
Oh, no. I don't like that trend where they start putting like salt and bacon and shit and chocolate. Like,
really?
I like those things, but I don't want them all.
Why
just because I like things separately doesn't mean I want them all together.
Oh, salty, salt and sweet together is nice.
Just if you like bacon, just eat bacon. Not everything has to be bacon flavored.
I agree with that. I think putting bacon into everything is dumb. But I think salty caramel is.
I hope that bacon trend is kind of coming to an end because I feel
like. Are you responsible for that? Partly baconandaficionado.com.
No, because at Bacon Aficionado, all I did was talk about bacon. I didn't talk about stupid bacon.
I thought you had
nonsense.
Bacon salt at some point.
I think I there may have been a couple of references to it, but
Gary didn't wear any bacon sunglasses or bacon neckties or anything.
The low point was when I went to that fancy food place and the guy handed it at the everything is bacon booth handed me a bottle of bacon lube. That was.
Oh, that's gross.
Yeah. I can't imagine that conversation. Hey, honey, look what I got. Something a little special.
No.
I almost gave it to you because, you know, the bacon aficionado thing, but.
Yeah.
That was just a good excuse to buy fancy bacon and cook it.
I did pretty much. I did get fancy
And then
bacon.
I realized I didn't need an excuse.
Yeah, I just used it.
Yeah. There you go. So Gmail went down this morning.
It's back up.
A lot of people were unhappy about that.
I didn't notice.
I didn't notice either. I think I saw like an error message.
I didn't notice either. Many people did.
Account, but it wasn't.
Was it only the web version, or were the IMAP and POP and Exchange versions?
All I noticed was the web browser version.
See, like Gmail is becoming very popular. People do use it as their like primary email or work email these days, because a lot of people were flipping their shit over having, you know, their main connection to the world.
We've used Gmail for work email for years because it's part of the Google Apps for your domain thing. So you basically, setting up Gmail for your domain doesn't involve buying a server or anything like that. You just point your domain to Gmail and set up an account, and there you go. You have
and email. this does highlight another danger of living la vida cloud. I mean, it's all very, you know, we all see the benefits until it breaks.
Well, we had this last year when Amazon's S2 went down, and Reddit and all the whiskey sites EC2 went down last summer when the whiskey sites were down for 2 days. Because of an Amazon EC2 problem, an Amazon cloud service.
I mean,
problem.
This is why I like using a dedicated mail program that will download Gmail and keep it offline. Yeah. Like, for example, if Gmail's down, okay, I get that I can't send or receive new emails right now, but I might also want to just like dig a phone number out of an old email or something.
Well, yeah, because I mean, that's like.
And if I'm just using the web browser, I can't even get in and look at my existing emails.
Yeah, I mean, you're right, because like when we go, when I was booking all the stuff for the trips, all of our travel information is just starred messages in Gmail. I haven't even put them into calendar entries or anything. So, if that goes sideways, we're completely boned.
Yeah.
It was up
relatively quickly.
I mean, there's going to be downtime when you do the cloud stuff. I think overall the convenience overweighs a little bit of downtime.
I imagine when Gmail goes down, like in terms of what Google engineers are doing at that moment, it's not like halfway down the list.
Yeah, the shit
it's
stops.
Like, we'll get to that after we've fixed, you know, this other thing. Like that is the number one job.
I mean, there's a measurable like percentage of productivity that drops in the world economically.
But I mean, if Gmail's down, how do they get the email alerts that say, hey, Gmail's down?
I don't think there are email alerts. There's a website that you can go to. They have a landing page.
Gmail down?
No, there's a landing page for all their services, and you can see whether the service is down.
I imagine it's like fucking war games at Google. When the Gmail goes down, there's like sirens and shit going off. People racing around in little carts.
That's the new end game for Fight Club, right? It's not, you know, the banks, and it's all the cloud services.
No, I think
it's
still the banks.
Okay, it's still money.
Yeah, I mean,
it's now money and...
You don't need to physically blow anything up anymore.
If you want to go after the people who are evil, then banks and Wall Street are the place to go, I think. I mean, I think whether Google's evil or not, it's a completely different scale of evil. But do you think...
You don't want to plant corn on a highway, an abandoned highway?
I mean, that sounds like fun.
Climb some vines in Sears Tower?
Wow, that dude is barbecuing up a storm over there. I hope he's barbecuing.
Is this a thing now?
This is the problem with podcasting from Will's house is he's constantly
so
distracted by what's going on outside his window.
Oh, I don't want to hear it. I talked about setting up the TV in here with Gina with headphones on so she could watch TV. But I knew that Norm wouldn't be able to concentrate if the TV was going in his line of sight.
No, it's not my line of sight. I learned to look at the screen.
Norm is one of those guys. Looking right now, he's got to have his screen in front of him at all times.
Of course.
Those Google goggles are going to be so perfect for you because you're the member of that first generation of people now.
How are they going to enforce?
Cannot survive unless there is some kind of screen in front.
But
of
how are they going to enforce people driving with that?
You're going to have to. The first time you plow into somebody, they take your glasses away. You're going to kill a bunch of pedestrians.
I'm not going to wear one. I think they're stupid.
You say that now.
Yeah,
I think they look.
You
really
are.
Dumb.
You are definitely.
What did you think about smartphones in 2005?
I wanted one more than anything else in the world, except I wanted Windows Phone 6.5.
Oh my God! Bad judgment all around.
Yeah.
No, I think that probably dudes are sitting around Google, and it was one of those things where like all of their cell phones lit up at once, and everybody reaches in and grabs their phone.
And then Marissa Meyer yells at them.
Marissa Meyer is experienced. She's not a UI and design and stuff, not uptime. Discovery, the space shuttle today, this morning.
Made its final flight.
Final flight.
And it wasn't really a flight. I mean, it was piggybacked on the 747.
It's the last time it'll be in the air.
Were its wheels, was it touching the ground in any way, shape, or form as it went from Florida to Washington, D.C.? No.
It's final time. I mean, I agree.
Yeah.
What you're saying. It is in the sky. It was in the sky.
Yes.
If Superman gave you a piggyback ride, you are not flying. Or I guess,
when Lois Lane held Clark Kent's hand, or Superman's hand, in Superman the movie,
mm-hmm.
she was flying.
Well, you're not flying every time you get on a plane. You're being carried to a destination by a thing that actually is flying.
Am I in a device that flies?
Yes.
Then I'm flying.
But you're not actually flying.
I am not the...
The plane is actually...
You are not the flyer.
I am a flyer. I'm not the flyee.
No, I think...
I'm the flyinator. I don't even know what we're
talking about anymore. Anyway, this Discovery Space Shuttle...
My parents are in Florida and saw it fly above the beach.
It flew from Florida to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Because its final resting place is the Smithsonian.
At Dulles, not the...
Right, right.
The Air and Space Museum extension at Dulles Airport. It's the other one.
But as it's for one final show, because DC is typically restricted airspace, no airplanes fly over DC for obvious reasons.
Thanks, Bin Laden.
The 747 carrying the space shuttle flew very low. Actually, it was like about 1,500 feet above the ground. And if you there's video of this, a great YouTube video of just crowds of people, you know, standing on top of DC office buildings and those old, you know, the Parthenon style, the
Capitol.
No, is it the Capitol? Well, whatever the other buildings are, the Frieze and the.
What are you talking about?
You know, the. Buildings in DC that look like Greek buildings.
You mean like the Supreme Court,
like the Lincoln Memorial, and
not the Lincoln Memorial, but they're standing on the roofs of those buildings.
U.S. Capitol.
Yes, they're standing
on the Federalist buildings.
Some of those buildings. Federal they're standing on top, taking pictures.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when they took off out of Canaveral, I haven't talked to Mom and Dad yet today, but he said that they were planning. The thing they said they were going to do was take off and then fly really low over the ocean, like 400 feet off the water, so you could see it really well. I was reading about the shuttle carriers, the shuttle transports. They're both converted 747s.
Mm-hmm.
One was bought from American Airlines, I think. And when they were fired, because the reason they have these is because there were places to land the shuttle around the world, right? In case of aborts at different times in the missions. So they might have to land in like Spain or Great Britain or in California or whatever. And then there were a couple of like regular places to land at Edwards Air Force Base and in Cape Canaveral. In Florida.
Yeah, because unless it's going into space, it can't really get anywhere on
its own.
It's
a glider.
Yeah. Right.
Like once the tank falls off when it's in space, it's a glider.
Right.
Like there's no... It has engines to slow its orbit and descend and start the descent.
Right.
But it's not like they can fire up the jets and do another pass if something goes wrong.
But they also have NASA jets that accompany.
Yeah, they're T-51s, right?
I'm not sure exactly the model, but they are branded NASA. And they have pilots that, are they civilian jets?
They're NASA. Depends on what kind of jet they are. The rules about NASA owning planes are that if they're military planes, then NASA can't own them. They're just on permanent loan, which is why they use 747s instead of C-5s.
They look like Hercules, Blue Angel style planes. They are jets.
Hercules is too small, but
to accompany the and they take pictures. That's where
like FAA-18s or something.
Yeah,
like
if you look at like the NASA Flickr page, you got all these great photos of the space shuttle from like. You know, right next to, the chase planes. And the dude is in there with the DSLR shooting pictures.
Well, and when they were landing, they used to do that as well. So they'd pick up the space shuttle as it was doing, it did this conical approach down toward the landing strip. Mm-hmm. And the chase plane would follow it, make sure the landing gear was down and all that stuff, make sure everything
was groovy. Have we talked about space shuttle? Like,
we have some.
I'm sure we've talked about it many times.
I mean, they retired the space shuttle last year. The final three flights, right, were last year.
Yeah.
Of Discovery, what are the two?
Atlantis and
Endeavor. Right. And they were planned, I mean, they're going to be retired. The plan was to retire them for a long time.
Yeah.
It's been in place since.
They were supposed to be retired much earlier.
I think like a year or two earlier. But the plan was in place to retire them, I think, back in like the Bush administration. That's the second Bush administration.
Probably right? Even the first Bush administration.
Maybe then. And it's always been the intent of NASA to repurpose the rocket technology to develop, you know, new rockets,
the booster rockets, you mean.
Right? To get to Mars,
yeah.
And so they're I mean,
hold on, but are they using the shuttle rocket technology for Mars stuff, or are they using the Apollo rocket technology?
I think they're using the Apollo technology, but
the Saturn V and all that.
Right? Yeah, but they are taking like lessons learned from the shuttle. They're decommissioning the shuttles and taking them apart, and they're going to use as much as they can, reuse as much as they can.
Well, I think when they look back on the shuttle program, it's a remarkable debacle. Like basically, the entire thing was funded during the Nixon era. With what ended up being, regardless of what the intent was at the time, what ended up being wildly implausible actual goals.
Goals?
Yeah. So like the goal was to get, I think, weight, launch cost down to $1,000 per pound or something like that. And the way they did that was by saying they were going to do 3 launches a month or a launch every other week or something like that.
Wow.
When in reality, they could do 3 or 4 a year at the outside, and still their failure rate was 1% across the –
The problem is that every president that sets out a vision for the space program, if that vision extends beyond the possible terms of their presidency
– That's true.
– then it's completely ineffective. And Barack Obama can talk about going to Mars or something.
Well, you say that, but Kennedy said we'll put a man on the moon by the end of the decade.
But he got shot. If he had fulfilled 2 full terms,
also the Russians,
we would have gotten to the moon during his presidency.
No, we wouldn't.
Because there was a 60.
It would have been close.
It would have been right after he left.
No, but it would. And we were also 69 was also we got to moon 69 because we were delayed by an accident. The very first attempt.
Apollo 1
accident.
That is the problem with a lot of policy type things, is that a lot of projects are, especially with space, they have to be super long term projects. And even though you set in motion, doesn't mean another president won't come along and say, "Well, I'm canceling."
Well, the president won't say it, but it's part it's politics.
It just dies in budget committees.
Yeah.
The other thing that's happening that happened was the Cold War. So, like we were fighting the Russians to get to space, to get to the moon first.
Yeah, and
that was a dramatic.
Once the Cold War ended, right, in 90, I mean, Nixon had these big plans in 89, right? I guess Bush had them in 89.
Bush had them in 89.
But once Cold War ended, motivations stopped.
Don't you think
there's
a good
racing anywhere?
You're right, it's sad because it's the only thing that's really lacking is the political will to do it, right? And I get it, especially in these straitened times, it's like, why would we? Yes, we get it. Nobody disagrees with the idea of space exploration and enhancing science and furthering, the human endeavor. But when everybody is broke and hungry, I get why it's not a top priority. But the good thing, like, even though it was terrible, the good thing about things like the Cold War is they did it. It's sad that it has to be out of a culture of fear and paranoia.
That's the greatest motivator.
So don't you think there's a good chance that if like Russia or China lands someone on the moon, then suddenly everyone's going to wake up again and go, shit, we need to start working on this again?
Yeah, International Space Shuttle, Space Station, the impetus for that was because,
the ISS was born out of Space Station Freedom, which was Reagan's plan
for a U.S.
to
space
counter
station.
Mir.
Exactly.
And
once the Cold War ended, we said, we didn't need Freedom, so we'll just team up with the Russians, cut the cost down, and build ISS. But they left China out, and so China is not involved in ISS and has their own program, they're going to try to put someone on the moon.
But here's the thing about ISS. ISS, the problem with the shuttle was there's never a clear reason for it to exist. Because if you couldn't launch satellites at $1 a pound – then all of a sudden they needed a reason for it to be there. That's what Space Station Freedom was. So then the shuttle's mission became to build this ISS thing. The ISS is kind of a giant boondoggle as well. We're learning a lot about people living in space. But aside from that, there hasn't been a whole lot of real science done there for the first 12 years of its existence. It was only when we had the capacity to put more than 3 people on the station at once that stuff opened up. So I mean, in a lot of ways, I see the point about NASA, like money spent on space research up until about 1970 did good dividends. Now, NASA spent 25 years just pissing money away in low Earth orbit because, with no exploration and not a whole lot of advancement.
And we talk about dividends and science being the return. Science has to be the ends, not the means. Like, we don't go to space and conduct experiments for science. If the goal is to get to Mars, and the science that we learn along the way, that is what pays off dividends.
Right.
Well, none of us are old enough to remember, but if you look at the history books, Sputnik terrified everyone in this country. We're like, it was, oh shit, what does this mean? Well, they're ahead of us. They had the first Russian, you have to remember, it's easy to talk about the first man on the moon, but Russians had the first satellite and the first man in space.
First man in orbit, too.
Right.
Like the first man in space, their first man in space was the first man in orbit.
They're the first woman in space.
It took us 3 or 4 launches to get somebody in orbit.
For many more things than we were the first of, and just because we set that arbitrary goal of the moon, then you know we said we could discount all that other stuff.
And we've been very, very fortunate in the last 40 years that even though American space exploration has been, as you say, kind of pathetic, we haven't really done very much. Somebody pointed out, I read something the other day. If you look at the last 40 years and run them backwards, it actually looks like we made great progress.
but hold on, the thing you said about not doing very much is wrong. We've done a ton with robots. If you look at both the outer solar system exploration with the things like Voyager and Cassini and Galileo and the probes that have gone to the different gas giants, as well as the stuff that's happened on Mars, even with a couple of really high profile failures, the Mars missions have been wildly successful.
Yes, but nothing really captures the public imagination or the public attention.
Well, a dude on the moon is much more interesting for the first 2 times you do it.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
And we've been very, very fortunate in that, even though the progress has been kind of slow in like a major way. Like we haven't gone back to the moon. We haven't gone to Mars. We haven't done anything that's like, that's the next big thing since the moon. Yeah. That because China and Russia, for whatever reason, haven't really sought to capitalize on that. But Norm's right. If they did, if suddenly the Chinese landed a man on the moon this year, the political earthquake that it would set off in this country would be massive.
Because
everyone's terrified about the military consequences. Also, here's the thing. It would be such a slap in the face to this country's kind of self-entitled position as we're the number one, we do everything first, we're the greatest, we're the most advanced, manifest destiny. There would suddenly be a very, very huge challenge
growth,
to that.
Like clockwork.
Yeah, but part of the fear in the 50s and 60s with the space program was about ballistic missiles. I mean, those two things are tied really closely together.
And we have treaties that say no military bases, bases on the moon or any other celestial body.
The moon is basically the same as Antarctica.
Right? But I'm just saying it would be even if you take the military consequences aside, a Chinese moon landing or any kind, like you go the next step, like a permanent Chinese base on the moon, would be such a slap in the face to this country's sense of national pride and USA number one.
Oh, yeah.
Like you just wouldn't be able to make that argument at all. It would be there all the time.
It's space
a constant,
race.
Kind of massive Nelson
2020.
Muntz, ha ha. That's what I would do. If I was China, I'd go to the moon and paint a massive Nelson Muntz face on the moon, like 1,000 miles across, so that every time we look up, there is a big Nelson Muntz looking down at us going, ha ha.
And you know what? We'd
also
just
copyright
the moon.
Infringement.
Yeah, what are you going to do about it? It's in fucking space. What are they going to send lawyers to the moon?
Lasers.
I hope they send lawyers to the moon. That would be fantastic.
And they would have to piggyback on a Chinese rocket to get up there. That would be the joke.
So embarrassing. Here's with the piggyback on those reliable Russian rockets to get to the ISS. Yeah. I mean, after those accidents.
In a way, I almost hope that they would do it because, like I say, you need a kick in the pants like that and to create another space.
Isn't that like
space
the most capitalistic thing, competition?
Yes.
Between governments.
Kind of.
There's not until corporations can figure out a way to make money from building something on the moon, they're not going to do it.
My only point is NASA doesn't have a really good record of the last 20 years of actually doing things that have benefit when it comes to manned space exploration. They got tied up in a bunch of terrible pork barrel politics with the shuttle program, then the ISS, and literally spent billions and billions of dollars. Of course, the other side of this whole argument is that the operating budget for NASA is minuscule compared to the overall budget. It's a
half a penny for every dollar spent.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like we're spending as much money as we've spent on entitlements or
But it's
bombs
not just, it's not just politics, it's also
F-22s
the practical
whatever.
I mean war. I mean yeah. when there is war, then money flows.
Well, like Arthur Clarke, who wrote 2001, the book and the movie screenplay as well, I guess. Did he write the screenplay?
Co-wrote it with Kubrick.
Okay, co-wrote it with Kubrick. He went on record.
I think that's right. I mean,
In the late 90s as saying, look, if we hadn't spent $1 trillion in Vietnam, we would have had the money to build, Hilton hotels on rotating – probably not on rotating space stations in retrospect. But, the vision of low Earth orbit as a tourist destination wouldn't have been out of the question had we not spent that amount of money.
It's one of those things also that, we can say, hey, we can put money into NASA and say our goal is to get to Mars, but the transition from operating shuttle technology to building new rockets, that's great, but it's also not very practical in the short run for jobs. Like there are people right now who maintain those shuttles and
lots of them.
Yeah,
like there is a massive supply chain behind the shuttle, But I mean, ultimately, is it NASA's job to have job programs? That's a bigger political question, I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't think so, but that's just me.
Going back to last week, if I had $500 million
yes.
from the sale of Instagram,
yes.
I would
Jay-Z wake matching, you up every morning.
Nope. I would challenge the government to match the donation to NASA.
You do an Ansari X prize?
Yeah. I will give NASA $400 million if the government matches.
I don't think that goes very far.
Yeah, exactly. It's not even going to get you anywhere.
Like, I think that you could buy a Sojourner probe.
No, that would get you a year of funding combined.
Well, no way. Those NASA like the Mars probes are some of the cheaper things that they've done traditionally. And because remember, they went on the whole starting in the Bush one era and going through Clinton and into Bush two.
I'm just saying that NASA would not turn down an extra $800 million in funding.
I don't know. It depends on what your conditions
are. Do you think there will be a man on Mars in our lifetime?
How long do you expect to live?
Well, let's be generous and say 50 years from today.
Wow. Okay.
Yes. So, I'm going to say yes.
2060? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay. I'd like to believe that man is American. I'd love to believe that. That's the real problem, though, isn't it? Because like in the timeline that we, like you say, we've sent, you know, buggies and stuff to Mars, and that's really amazing. But in terms of like, you know, an Apollo 11 type moment, the problem is the next thing is very, very far away. Like getting someone to the moon was amazing, but the moon's really not that far away. Mars is really far away compared to how far we've gone so far.
Well, different times of year, it's closer than others. But yeah.
Yes.
I mean, you're looking at six months in space, regardless. Yeah. When the longest people spend in space is, well, I guess the dudes
they
spend
that
more
experiment.
Than a year on Mir.
Yeah, they've done experiments, psychological experiments.
Yeah. Locked in a cage. Yeah, I think there's actually one of those going on right now in Hawaii, right? Some people are locked
about
in
one
a
last
room.
Year. We've talked about it on the podcast, yeah. Back at the old office, that experiment, you know, 500 days or so.
I think that one of those they had to bail out on early, though, because one of the guys got schizophrenic or something. I can't remember.
People snuck in alcohol.
Oh, that was it.
For a Christmas party.
Yeah, everybody got drunk.
There's only so much Rock Band you can play inside.
Fake space. No DLC. Yeah,
that's right.
So Discovery's on its way. It's going to be at the Air and Space Museum at Dulles. The Enterprise, which was the dummy, the flight test dummy that they built in the 70s.
Never went beyond low Earth orbit.
Never went into low Earth orbit.
Really, even?
No, it was only on the back of the 747 and cut loose and glided in.
Oh, what? So
only for glidering.
It's a great photo of the cast of Star Trek, the original cast, with Gene Roddenberry.
Yeah.
Back in the day with their bell bottoms and long hair in front of the USS Enterprise.
Well,
I guess the Enterprise.
That shuttle was originally supposed to be called the Constitution, unveiled on Constitution Day in 1976 rather. Sorry,
the centennial,
the centennial,
or bicentennial,
but yeah, bicentennial, and there was a write-in campaign to Gerald Ford to have it named the Enterprise by Trekkies, but they foolishly had the one that never went to space.
Doesn't matter. I think
named Enterprise.
I think. Well, the irony is that the Enterprise was a Constitution class starship.
Yes.
Wow.
It all comes back around. And then the other irony.
Yeah, they should have had the shuttle be the Constitution and then have an Enterprise based on that.
Well, and even worse than that is the original plan for that shuttle was that it was supposed to be retrofitted with engines to be the second space shuttle, what later ended up being the Challenger. Mm-hmm. But because of things that they learned in flight tests, they had to just start from scratch.
Doesn't that mean, though, that every shuttle that was created was technically an Enterprise-class shuttle? Because the line is named after the first ship.
Not in the real world, only in Star Trek.
No, I think that's also true in like military vessels. Yeah.
No, but these we just called the space shuttle because there were only five of them.
Okay.
Were there five?
I think there were more
Columbia,
than five.
Columbia, Challenger, Discovery,
Endeavor, Atlantis.
Five. Six.
Six.
Well, the one doesn't count because it didn't go to space. Oh, Hulu.
What's going on with Hulu?
Hulu is going to add original programming.
Yeah, haven't they already started with that?
They had started with that. There's a show on there. It's a political show. But I think Morgan Spurlock also has a deal.
The fast food guy?
Yes. Not Fast Food Nation. But,
no, the other
Super
one.
Size
Super
Me.
Super Size Me.
To do a reality show. And, you know, it's an ongoing trend. You see Netflix producing their show.
I mean, YouTube?
Yeah, they're not only paying for the shows to be made, but they're also getting exclusive distribution deals. YouTube also has a bunch of original shows and channels now.
Yeah, but these are traditional 23 and 40.
Well, I think
the
lines are being
blurred.
I mean, I don't know what the difference is between a show on Hulu that is you know, just coincidentally 20 minutes and or spaced out to have three commercial breaks in the middle and a, you know, and Felicia Day's 15 minute show, weekly show.
There is no difference.
It's the same thing. I mean, they're camera people. It's edited. It's nice. I mean, there's
the only difference between these shows is them taking into consideration how you're going to be watching them. So, like, web content is traditionally kept short because what we've learned is that when you are leaning forward in front of a computer screen, you generally are not down for watching long amounts of content.
Yeah, but that's not true because people watch hours of TNTs and us doing stupid shit.
People will, but in terms of, I think for the most part, we're more comfortable kind of sitting back in on a couch or a sofa or whatever and watching TV shows and movies. Yeah. Did you see there was another kind of maybe semi-related to this? There was another story that came out just today which said that tablets have now, and when we say tablets, we mean iPads, but tablets have now moved into second position as the second preferred screen behind. They've taken over traditional laptops.
Yeah. Oh, I don't
over,
know. That.
Which seems fairly obvious.
Over desktop and laptop. Yeah. Tablets, second only to TV.
Yeah.
So I've started working on the tablet a lot. Like this morning I had to leave the house and I went and, you know, wrote a couple stories.
And it's still consumption devices for me.
Sat in a Starbucks. It's not a great experience.
No, it is not.
Like the four-finger swipe made it a massive difference
because
you can multitask.
I love that.
But other than that, it's essentially not good.
I can get use out of it as a productivity machine because, again, my needs are so low. I'm just writing. Well,
I'm in the same boat.
But you have a compromise, a mental compromise. You know that when you are out at a coffee shop or out anywhere with your iPad that you have a mental barrier. You're not going to be doing the things that you otherwise would be doing with a laptop or a desktop.
Yeah, I looked at something this morning and said, oh, I can't look at that because it's Flash. I knew without even having to click on it.
Well, not even the codecs, but just like the ambition of work.
I don't know. I mean, I know that I'm going to have to get you to do images for me, which is fine because you do images anyway. So,
And the difference is there between laptop and desktop. I know there are things that I can't do as efficiently on the laptop.
Yeah, but on the other hand, I feel like we've talked about this a ton, but on the other hand, like my laptop would have been useless because I was someplace that there wasn't a power outlet and it would last 2 hours and I needed 4 hours. Yeah. And so the iPad was a much better solution for that. So,
I still maintain the best YouTube viewer is the iPad, period. Over desktop, over in terms of reliability, image quality.
Well, except for the mobile content problem. Because a solid third
it's annoying
of
the way that a lot of content is restricted.
Well, all new content, it just takes a little bit longer.
No. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that some people actually flag content to say, don't play this on mobile devices.
It's really annoying.
I have not encountered that.
It's very annoying.
Usually like movie trailers and stuff like that.
Okay.
But I love sitting in the living room and just blasting it over to the Apple TV when I want to show
somebody. Oh, my God. That is magic.
That is still a great feature.
I'm not sure. Does the video signal actually send from the I know it does when you do mirroring, but when you do full screen mode, is actually still sending data? Like, are you still downloading from Wi-Fi to iPad back to router, then to Apple TV, or just sending the time code?
I'd have to sniff it to see, but my hunch is that it just sends the token for the video to the Apple TV.
Because you get almost 1-to-1. I mean, there's a slight little delay for pausing and playing, but for scrubbing, you get it's almost instantaneous.
Yeah. I mean, I have a pretty good wireless network, so it's difficult to say for sure. But I mean, we could look at it and see. It wouldn't be hard to figure out.
The most convenient thing ever. Yeah, I mean, I used to pull my laptop down, plug it in, and use like a wireless mouse. And
the more convenient would be if it's built into the TV, so you didn't have to switch to the right input on the TV.
No, but
Apple TV was smart enough to know that to switch the TV for you with the HDMI control.
The iPad basically becomes a remote control with a live preview of the video I want to play.
Oh yeah,
because I have my bookmarks, I have my playlists, and I can watch a little bit, and then
it's like a video DJ.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Love it,
and it doesn't take too much power.
So Hulu original content.
Yeah, what are they making? What's the show?
They have this Morgan Spurlock show, and then also
what show?
Morgan Spurlock show.
Okay,
and then they have another political show. The thing is, Hulu is pretty old now, right?
Yeah, it's like four or five years old, right?
Maybe even more than that.
How healthy are they right now? Because it wasn't too long ago we were reading stories about them trying to sell themselves and failing.
They have so many shareholders.
They've been on the auction block for a while now, I think.
Who
knows?
It was created by a combination of all these
Fox
media
and
companies.
NBC mostly.
Yeah.
But now the media companies want to do their own thing. I mean,
they just did another very aggressive round of advertising as well. So
yeah.
They are still pumping. I mean, original content's not cheap. They're still pumping money into.
Do you guys use Hulu?
Yeah, but I don't like it very much.
Do you watch it with a device or on the computer or iPad or something?
I usually use the the Xbox 360 or the PS3.
So you pay for Hulu Plus,
which is good. But yeah, so I'm paying $8 a month.
Yeah.
I still have to sit through commercials, which I think, you know, I should only have to do one or the other.
Yeah.
And again, a lot of content is restricted for all kinds of, like 30 Rock right now, because of some kind of bullshit licensing restriction, is web only.
See, that the differentiation between web only and living room is one of those ridiculous
things. And it's ridiculous if you've got, for people like me with an HD PC, I can just get around it.
Yeah.
But it's stupid that I have to do that.
Yeah.
And here's another example. Like, for example, I usually don't watch SNL live. I usually watch it the next day so I can fast forward through the unfunny parts.
So you watch what, Weekend Update and like two other things?
Club Open and the monologue.
I heard a lot of stuff this week that the SNL did a Game of Thrones sketch. I was like, okay, I'd be interested in
the sexploitation one or sexposition one. It was funny.
I wouldn't know because when I watch it on Hulu, I don't get the cold open because of some bullshit licensing restriction.
Oh, well, this wasn't in the cold. It wasn't in the cold open.
Yeah, it was the cold open.
Oh, I thought it was a.
It's happened many times, even in the monologue, especially when they sing songs, because they only pay the
various
royalties
can't be
for
cleared.
The broadcast once. Yeah.
Well, or things like even on late night shows, sometimes like you'll see Fallon or Letterman say, "Hey, make sure you watch this tonight because we're never going to rerun this."
Yeah.
Because they play some song that was crazy expensive for whatever reason.
Right.
So.
And this is I mean, I get some versions that, like, you know, when you watch Married with Children on Netflix, you have to listen to that awful,
oh my god, that's
sound
so
alike version of the theme song because they couldn't continue the license to Frank Sinatra song forever. I kind of get that.
I can't even watch it because of the theme song.
I just fast forward through that part. It's awful.
Really bad.
Yeah.
So next thing on the list is my toolkit. Is this supposed to be here? I think you must have put this one in here, Norm. I have a toolkit.
Yeah.
It's in a box. I carry it around with me. I use it to open things and take things apart.
Mm-hmm.
There's a slideshow on the site that explains how what's in there, basically.
Is this something you assumed people would be interested in, or did you have a lot of requests?
I didn't put it on the list here.
To look inside your toolbox?
No, but the
thought it was interesting.
I have a story, yes. Yeah. When we do take it apart, Will brings a variety of tools, and now if you want to know where to buy those tools or what those tools are useful for, a lot of them are jeweler's tools.
Or variants thereof, yeah. So like, I have a jeweler's screwdriver. I think the best thing that I've ever bought tool-wise that is this little jeweler's screwdriver that has 16 bits that go in the handle. It literally is about 4 inches long with the bits in.
Yeah.
And you can open anything. It has Torx heads, square heads, Phillips, flat, and something else that I'm forgetting. Hex.
I always feel great when you buy one of those tool kits that has like 200 pieces or whatever. We just did this at home because we're doing some projects around the house. So we never had a really good, a proper drill. So we bought a Black & Decker drill, but it comes in a kit of like 200 pieces, like all the bits and Allen wrenches and screwdrivers and tape measure and a square and all the things you could ever want in any reasonable kind of household project. You just feel good having
it's like
knowing
Tim Allen in a box.
What's worse is that the bad thing is 5 years later you'll still have that. You open it up and you'll be missing the one piece.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you a secret
that you need because that's the one you use the most.
Well, the Black & Decker one's a little tricky because every time I've ever bought drill bits from them, they shattered as you use them. But if you put the stuff back the moment you're done with it,
well, yes, that is
then
the
you
right
don't
way
have
do
that
it.
Problem.
But if you share that with a bunch of people, then it never
don't
happens.
Share that. Don't if you share that with people that don't put your shit back.
Be
don't
greedy
share
with your
with
tools.
Them.
I'm very anal about that because I have a screwdriver with removable bits, and like whenever I'm done, everything goes back in its little hole because
this is another
disappear.
Larry David situation. Like this is why you don't loan things to people because you know.
No, there are some people I'll loan anything to because I know they'll bring it back.
Oh, that's even worse. But then if you play favorites, then
no, it's not playing favorites. It's that you burn me once and I'm never going to trust you again. It's very simple. I don't think that makes me a bad person.
No, it doesn't. But I'm saying it in the wrong context.
I'm comfortable being toolist and not letting people use tools that don't return shit.
The careless person
it's like loaning,
might not be so happy.
Loaning movies and stuff.
What do you think is the most useful tool?
Screwdriver.
I was going to say tape measure.
I can't.
Well, no, there's a difference between the most useful tool and the one you always want but never have.
Mm.
I think screwdriver is the most useful tool overall. You use it the most, especially when you're taking stuff apart. Or
like that basic one you buy at Ace Hardware for $4. It has the removable shaft and it has.
All I need is one.
That's
that
the one you need. One, you need one that's going to have every bit.
Yeah. You just need like
every head that you can.
You need
two
a good
most common
a good Phillips head and a good solid straight
flat head
and magnetized heads.
Yeah,
I yeah, you want, definitely got to be magnetized, especially when you're doing like fiddly work with little computer screws and stuff.
Yeah,
but tape measure is a thing where I always wish I had
tape measures. You need that for almost every job.
But I have about 40 tape measures, and I never find them when I need one. Yeah. That's the one thing that I'm bad about. Because you hook it on your belt, and then you're getting ready to get in the shower or something. You're like, oh shit, I still have the tape measure here, and then you don't put it back in its place. You're done with the project. But the toolkit stuff's on the site. It's not. Looking at it, what was it, like 50 or 60 bucks worth of parts probably, maybe 70 at the outside. There was some pretty good overlap between a lot of the different pieces. Like that jeweler's screwdriver is completely unnecessary if you buy a big toolkit.
Yeah.
And then the security bits, it's funny, security bits used to be really expensive. And security bits are like the custom screw heads that asshole manufacturers
Torx
use.
Torx
aren't even security bits anymore. They were a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I think the car industry started those, because the first time I saw those was on Chevy cars when I was about like 12 years old. But the Torx heads with the hole in them, with the post, Microsoft uses those on Xbox controllers, so you can't open up Xbox controllers. Let's see, what else? The little tri-head, it looks like a Phillips head, but it's only three corners instead of four.
Right.
That Nintendo uses on Game Boys and stuff like that.
It's not easy to take those things apart, but obviously you can if you want. You can seek out the bits.
Well, the point is the bits, you can get a set of bits that has like 35 different security bits, common ones in different sizes, for like $4 at Amazon.
Right.
Like that stuff that used to be really hard to find 10 years ago, you just go to Amazon and it's there and it's $4. So there's no reason not to have this stuff around if you want to be able to take stuff apart. And then like the plastic spudgers and the spreading bars and that stuff, they're like $3 or $4 each. So they're not terribly expensive. If you want to be prepared for this stuff, you can.
But again, it's not just a matter of having the tools. You also have to know what the hell you're doing, because you don't want to be taking things apart unless you have the know-how to put them back together.
Most of it is the thing is there's good guides for that stuff online. We've done videos for a bunch of different devices. The general rule is, as long as you're careful and go very slowly and kind of like look to see how something goes together rather than just being ham-fisted and jamming a butter knife in there and twisting, you can't mess up too much.
How's that PS Vita doing that you took apart?
It's fine. It works great.
Okay.
I played Monsters Ate My the Monsters game. I can't remember.
What about the iPad? Did that go back together right?
I don't know. I haven't talked to Adam since we gave it back
okay.
to him.
Okay.
So.
I see.
Yeah.
I imagine if it was not going well, you would have heard about it by now, wouldn't you?
But you would have thought that. So maybe everything's cool.
Maybe he can't email you to complain because you fucked up his iPad.
I mean, that's possible too. Who knows? There's a lot to... thanks for bringing that up again, Gary. I appreciate it.
I'm just trying
to... I saw it taken apart online. There's a post on the site about it, of a DSLR camera.
I saw that. That was awesome.
Wow, that seems like there's way too many.
I'm not doing that.
Now, when we opened up the iPad, we were pleasantly surprised. There aren't that many components. Most of the stuff is on one circuit board, all the chips, and the most complicated piece of technology is the screen with and then the batteries. You have battery, screen, circuit board. That's it, and the housing. Right, that's basically screws and camera, tiny little accessories. Yep. But it's a lot of surface area, a lot of empty space in the iPad. Same thing with the PS Vita. There are more boards and there are buttons and there's battery and memory and it's a little more compact space, but it's pretty well laid out. A DSLR,
a lot of ribbon wires in the Vita.
Yeah, a DSLR is crazy complicated. If you open up like a just like a SLR from the old days or like a
well they were relatively straightforward. I've taken apart like a film SLR.
Yeah, a film SLR or a rangefinder. You have film and you have mirrors, but it's all mechanical.
Yeah, especially if it was an autofocus camera.
That to me would seem to be more difficult, because as soon as you start getting into moving parts, mm-hmm. that's where the nightmare really begins.
Well, the moving parts they're still moving parts in the DSLR. You have all those same physical moving parts. But now with the digital sensor and all the circuits.
And all the light sensors and stuff like that go with it. The focus sensor and
LCD and
The amount of battery that they cram in different places or there was crazy stuff in that thing. It looked like they cut the casing away from that. It didn't even look like it was opened.
No, you can pry it open.
Can I borrow your Sony camera?
You cannot borrow my Sony camera.
I just want to see what's inside.
Yeah. I mean, it's not very user serviceable at all.
I bet it's user serviceable. I bet I can take it apart.
God, the worst thing is,
Gary.
No, I don't think you can.
I think you could take it apart, but just not properly.
What do you think is the most complex thing that you could strip down to to as many elements as possible and then completely reconstitute in working fashion?
Maybe a lawnmower?
Wait, were you saying you could or like as in
something I can take apart and put back together?
Yeah.
I don't know. I've taken apart. I've taken the Xbox all the way apart.
You know, that's the people complex. That I have the most respect for are like watchmakers and watch. Like the,
that's my grandfather was a watch.
Because you're talking about like super, super fiddly, precise precision components. And like, again, the moving part nightmare there is just crazy.
Yeah, but the thing about watches, so my grandfather collected watches and did watch repair and stuff. It was his hobby. The thing about watches is once you understand how it works, once you understand the basic mechanisms, he always said it wasn't particularly difficult. You would look and say, okay, this is the wheel that does this thing, and this is the wheel that does this thing. It's the same way that I look at a computer and see, oh, that's the video card and that's the CPU.
Right. They're just different sizes.
It's just very small. And you have a specialized set of tools to make managing those small things good. Sure. Like his thing was always more about being really tidy with the pieces. And this is where he was bad at it too, because he would take apart a watch and then put the big wheel in the container with the other big wheels and the small wheel in the container with all the other small wheels, so that like when he died, he had drawers full of just watch hands.
I just remember.
And then you have to figure out which ones went with which.
Well, there's a great video of this guy in Brooklyn who the watchmaking trade is dying out.
Yeah.
But there are still people who do it. And there's this guy who takes old watches and repurposes them and makes new watches out of them. And you can get like special watches and a lot of hipsters buy them. But I was thinking about like in Look at the Watchmen.
The father.
Manhattan. Yeah. And he was a watchmaker, right? And then once
the dawn of the nuclear
atomic age came around, you know, his father threw his watch parts out the window and said, "You're going to be a computer scientist.
No,
you're going to be a scientist. A nuclear scientist.
That's what your dad said, Norm.
You're going to be a nuclear scientist.
Let
be a man
out,
of the
Norm.
Future.
It's okay.
Do you understand how cars work at all? Like, car breaks down, are you going to be able to look under the hood and diagnose anything at all, or are you completely lost? I'm just trying to figure out if, like, your ability to understand, like, basic engineering and how things work and taking them apart, like, if that translates into vehicles or if that's like a whole other thing.
So when I was a kid, one of the things that my father and I did was took apart different size motors at different times. So like I can like rebuild a carburetor, but that's essentially useless in a modern age because nobody has carburetors in cars anymore. Stuff that I've done is like I've replaced thermostats and stuff like that. I've replaced hoses that break. But if you had to like if you had a blown head gasket or something that required machining to fix, I would never try to do
it. Right.
That.
You watch something like The Walking Dead and they're always fixing that RV.
Yeah.
I'm like,
the thing is, it's much easier to fix a car from the 70s than a car that's from today.
Part of the reason I ask is because I happen to be listening to Click and Clack the other day on my
show on NPR I cannot stand.
I mean, sometimes the comedy of it seems a little bit forced, but those guys clearly know what they're talking about when it comes to mechanics of car engines. Right. And it seemed like every single problem they diagnosed involved them mentioning four or five specific parts I had never even heard of in a car.
But it's amazing. I mean, kids
make noises.
They can take entire cars apart.
Yeah.
But if you're talking about an old car, especially something that doesn't have a lot of electronic stuff, it's not a hard. It's like there's not a whole lot to it.
Well, that's the thing. When you take a modern car into a mechanic and you say, "I'm hearing a strange noise," the first thing they do is hook it up to a computer.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the computer tells them what's wrong, and then they order the part, and then it probably doesn't fix it because that seems to be the way it goes. I think if you're like. That's one of the things that I've always talked about with Gordon with the zombie stuff is I think in a zombie apocalypse, even though the cars aren't going to be as reliable from like the early 80s, late 70s, I think you're much better off with those cars because you're actually going to be able to fix them yourself. Whereas if the computer
you can find replacement parts anywhere.
You think. But, you know, do you want to be digging through the parts warehouse when the zombies are chasing you?
I'm going to recruit a mechanic.
Okay.
Be on my squad.
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's when it's good to have a trade.
I like the old idea of the shade tree mechanic working on your old cars in the zombie apocalypse. That's all I'm saying. A couple more things. The DOJ versus the book publishers. We talked about this some last week. David Carr from the New York Times had a really good post earlier this week. And his basic position is that, yes, the Apple and the book publishers did do something wrong, including to fix prices with the agency model. However, Amazon was doing something that was just as damaging to that industry before by essentially loss leading books and eroding the value in new books from a $25, $30 price point, which is what they had been when you were buying new hardbacks,
yeah,
to $9.99.
But wasn't that already happening in the print model? I would go into a Barnes & Noble or whatever, or you're a Costco or a supermarket where they sell books now, and their prices are slashed on new releases right away.
The difference, though, was that Costco would loss lead maybe 5 or 10 titles a year, and Amazon loss led every single title that they were selling.
Right.
So, however, when you got to the end of that of the column, he had this really great point. Like, he's absolutely right. I mean, I think that probably in the Amazon versus the DOJ versus the book publishers, everybody is doing things that are bad for that industry. And especially if you dig deeper and get into the stuff that Apple does, locking competition off of their platform, that's even worse in a lot of ways. But then you look at like the scale of that versus like the investment banks that basically destroyed our country 5 years ago, 3 years ago. And you wonder why the DOJ are fucking around with penny ante nonsense with book publishers when they could be going after,
because
they
should be going after Merrill Lynch
and Chase
and not retirement funds. Yes.
Yeah. No, that's true. But I thought it was an interesting article. I may not have linked it on the site. It was a little bit boring for us, maybe. But there we go. David Carr's a smart dude, too. Norm, there's an IKEA TV I saw.
David Carr is the dude who was the in that movie, the New York Times documentary.
The Page Five.
Page One.
Page One.
Page One, Inside New York Times. Yeah. He was the documentary Shadowed.
Yes.
Yeah. Dude, super interesting.
I met him at a cocktail party once. He's a very interesting dude. We had like a 30-minute conversation, and at the end of it, somebody was like, "Hey, do you know who that was?" It's like, "No, I had no idea, but that dude is really interesting." And then, you know, yeah.
He's the real deal.
Yeah, real deal.
IKEA
has a TV.
Yes. Not only will they sell you the furniture, so now when you go into an IKEA, and I love going, I haven't been to IKEA in a long time, but you go to IKEA one for the food.
No.
Yes, that is the number one reason.
Number one reason.
Oh, yes.
Who in this room, who at this table has gone to an IKEA with no intent to buy furniture or housewares and just for food?
Okay, I've never gone that far. I wish I had. But I will say.
That's why there's a shortcut right to the cafeteria when you go in. You don't need to go straight. You don't need to even go through the maze of furniture.
That is how you get
the showroom.
It's like I don't love going to IKEA because it's always a clusterfuck. But when you remind me of the cafeteria, that's always what gets me there, because those meatballs,
Swedish meatballs,
and the chocolate almond tort they have there, and also even if you just want a little snack, just the idea of getting like a hot dog for 50 cents or whatever.
Oh no, the best
it's
part,
great.
See, the best. I don't know if IKEA is around the U.S.
Look,
or different.
Look at the snobbishness going
the
on.
The upstairs
there.
Cafeteria, which is how I envision a cafeteria of the future being like.
Right? Why upstairs?
Well. Because upstairs where the showroom
is. He means
the main. Our IKEA's all the same layout.
Well, there's a nice little sit-down cafeteria area that Norm's talking about. And then there's like a quick just grab-and-go type place down by the checkout.
Grab-and-go place is different food. The grab-and-go is only those.
That's where you get like the 50-cent ice cream cones, the cinnamon rolls, and the hot dogs. And pizza rolls.
So they have they have an entree and dessert.
But they also have a little supermarket area down there where you can get stuff. You know, you can buy bars of the chocolate or buy the boysenberry, lingonberry sauce.
Lingonberry,
and the meatballs. But the meatballs, I always get the extra 5 meatballs.
You always get
five
for $5. Yes, five for a dollar. Extra $5.
Every time I only had the meatballs.
Come on, Will. Tell us why it's not satisfactory.
I just got really, really violently ill after going to IKEA the first time.
It's because your delicate little gourmet stomach can't handle 99% food.
No, dude,
this was when we were in the Brisbane office.
Still,
and I was eating, like, what is this falling down?
I was eating KFC twice a week.
In the cartoon version of Will's stomach, all the little enzymes and stomach acids look like the Planters peanut guy, Mr. Pennybags from Monopoly.
They squint through their monocles.
Squinting through their monocles at the IKEA meatballs going, what is this? This looks like peasant food.
It was really
Where's my foie gras?
Oh,
what is it? Is that a McNugget?
Didn't eat McDonald's.
They're ruining my sous vide in my stomach.
Yeah, and they all talk like Lane Price from Mad Men.
Hold on, which one's Lane Price?
The very posh British.
Oh, the English guy?
Yeah.
Oh, I hate that guy. He's so snooty.
No, he's in your stomach.
Oh my God!
You've got a billion of those in your stomach.
Oh, that's horrible. To go eat some yogurt.
Looking down over their glasses Tannen. Going, I say.
The only guy worse than him is the American.
What is this rum concoction that's been sent down here now?
You don't drink rum?
Gastric.
I drink rum.
No, I meant that as in rum as in not satisfactory.
I like rum. Hold on. Rum is a synonym for not satisfactory in English?
By all means, look it up.
Oh, no.
That's super racist, man.
Well, how is that racist?
What? Because rum is a product of the Caribbean. So you're, they named the beverage.
Logic is required.
Huh? This is part of this English class war business. Anyway.
No.
So I don't like going to IKEA because there's too fucking many people there.
Send this back up, Nigel.
Yeah, no wonder you were violent. Yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. There was an uprising.
There's only one way this ingrate will learn. This kind of food is simply not acceptable.
So that'll do it for
Return
us
Return it
week.
Immediately.
Always a great show,
but
guys.
Sir, he's on a bus. Irrelevant. It's the only way he'll learn.
Are you done?
Send this fast food.
I like that.
Back up.
I like that you hold your
glasses. I'm holding the
glasses. To do the voice.
Yeah, because that's how I'm doing the kind of the haughty British stomach enzymes.
Because British aristocrats' stomach enzymes can't afford arms on their glasses, or are you holding the monocle?
He's looking down over the glasses to see if the food really is contemptible as he believes.
And bacteria have 10 arms anyway. So
right,
they're pseudopods.
Yeah. That is the number one reason go to IKEA.
Are we still talking about
the
IKEA?
Food? Yeah.
It's not the cheap shop. Swedish furniture.
And number two is the great showroom layout. It's amazing.
No. It's a fucking Disneyland maze.
It's brilliant.
It's designed to make you see everything in the store before you can check out.
It's very well designed. Brilliant.
It's a pain to consumerism.
I mean, that's why the cafeteria exists, because by the end of it, you are exhausted.
Yeah, it's
famished.
It's a perfectly designed experience.
And then you have your Swedish meatballs and ice cream to satisfy you.
That's your reward for putting up with
that
modular shit.
And we've hacked the system and gone straight to the cafeteria.
See, but the bad thing about the whole deal, you want to know how
we
I
should
go
do
to
it. I like to say, we should go to IKEA just for food and fuck the furniture.
Did you ever see the soap opera that was shot in IKEA?
If I were the boss of IKEA, I would open separate... No, because that might keep people away from my furniture.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of just little breakout IKEA restaurants.
I'm going to tell you my IKEA move. This is my perfect IKEA trip. I go in, go straight in the exit, go to the warehouse section, grab the thing I need off the shelves, and get the fuck out of there as quickly as possible.
How do you know that's what you need, though?
Because I look at it in the catalog. I use the internet.
You need to see it in the flesh to see if it actually is what you want.
Particle board is in the back.
You kind of want to wobble.
You want to get in there and get a good look at it.
Exactly. I don't like the showroom.
But the point is that IKEA is now selling this new kind of product, which is very interesting because it's a combined... It's like IKEA is one of the places we go... I need something to put my TV on, right?
Yeah.
Well, now they will sell you the TV and the cabinet,
TV stand,
all in
cabinet.
One thing.
Yep.
Which is you have to put the with those little cams. Do you have to put the TV together with the cams, or does it just build straight into the cabinet?
No, the TV.
Yeah. So
is
what you're going to get is a big sheet of glass and a bag of phosphorus
and some very clearly designed instructions.
I'm missing some green pixels.
Grow some liquid crystals.
We're a few pixels short in this bag.
You have a bag. You have to dissolve.
We're
going to
go back to the pixel bins at IKEA and get some spare ones.
Yeah.
But I mean, is the TV integrated in the furniture? So you mount it into the furniture?
Did you look at the story on your own website?
No, I've been busy today.
Okay. Well, pull it up right now and you'll see the picture.
It's a video. So what's going to happen is IKEA has contracted out with a Chinese company to sell LED, LCD, HDTVs.
Okay.
Now, they range from 24 inches to 40 inches. And it's the TV itself is not a part of the furniture. The furniture is designed in a way to hide the cables of the TV.
Right.
But the furniture also has... the 2.1 sound system, so you have a wireless sub. There's amp built in. You have a Blu-ray player built in. You have,
I'm presuming all those connections are hidden inside.
In the cabinet. Right.
I love this idea.
So
I love the getting rid of cables.
Yeah,
hiding them,
which is why this is interesting because it makes sense that IKEA, being a big fan of clean design, the Scandinavians did it first. Now,
if you want to live in one of these fantasy apartments you only ever see on TV where there's no cables and everything just seems perfectly integrated, this is maybe one way.
I thought
to
you had to just
that.
Not have a TV to do that.
No, but I'm saying the people that have the TV, all the wires are built into the wall, or they've got that coving that hides everything.
It's not necessarily going to be the best TV or the best sound system, or even those most.
But it's
affordable.
For minimalists.
But it is for minimalists, and if you're going to buy I think it's going to be good for college apartments.
Yeah. Yeah, and obviously that's a big part of IKEA's
or post-college apartments.
No,
is really
college. But if you're very concerned with the aesthetic of a thing and you want your TV to really feel like it's part of the furniture, well, this is literally that.
Yeah.
And I think it'll actually I can see this being quite successful because no one on AVS forums is going to go buy this fucking TV, right? But for the average Joe, where they just want a TV that is good enough. And what's interesting as well, I think it's going to be really interesting is that TV looks like it's got its own OS built into it.
They didn't actually demo it in the video, but they did say it has smart functionality. So one remote with
it's
access
to Wi-Fi built into it.
DivX, because they love DivX there. They'll have Netflix.
Oh, those pirates.
Now, I think it would be very interesting to see what the IKEA version of an OS looks like, right? Because IKEA are known for very simple, elegant, functional, modular.
They've never delved into software.
Right. But so what will be the result?
Which is that's the one place that's delved into software.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's really interesting. I love the idea of integrated – of stuff that's integrated better. I mean, one of the things that I wanted to do years ago that I never actually did because it seemed like it would be a really enormous pain in the ass was build a desk that had the monitor and all that stuff integrated in, and you basically just jammed a PC in that kind of connected to an edge connector in the back.
Right.
And had all the other stuff integrated, so there were no wires.
I mean, it's great up to a point, but you know – one of the problems with it is it's all one thing, right? So let's say, for example, if the Blu-ray player breaks, am I going to be able to just slot it out of there, or am I going to be taking my whole fucking TV cabinet in for repair?
I think
that's a problem.
Well, there's 5-year warranty. Also.
Okay.
Well, but that doesn't help you when you have to pile it in the back.
I think you're still going to have to
smart car.
It'll probably be compartmentalized, but you'll need their.
This has always been
player.
A problem with these all-in-one things. If one thing breaks, it all basically breaks.
Yeah. I think these you'll have to assemble it yourself anyway, so it must be compartmentalized.
I mean, I'm particularly kind of attuned to this right now because we're moving the house around a little bit, and you know, we took one TV that was in one room, and well, now it's better off over here. When you've got talking about a whole unit, things aren't always as transferable as that, right?
Well, I think so you can't break up the sound in the TV probably with this.
No, I'm just saying, like, you might, like, let's say we decide, well, we don't want a TV in this room anymore, we want it over here. You might just want the you don't necessarily want the whole cabinet, might not be appropriate to move, but it's all going to be one piece. But again, for people like, I go to IKEA sometimes and I see how, when you see how some of the rooms, like, they have beautiful kitchens. Walk around these beautiful kitchens at IKEA, and I'm like, shit, this just makes me feel like I'm going to go home to my own kitchen and feel shitty. Because this
you
is
have a really nice kitchen.
But not as nice as some of the really nice IKEA
ones. It's well lit.
Your kitchen is much nicer than the IKEA kitchens.
I don't agree with
it's
that.
It's just
the IKEA. Yeah, don't buy furniture. Don't buy cabinets.
No, but the point is, they can make, they do create these very pleasing surrounding by making everything seem so neat and tidy. And one of the least neat and tidy areas of your house is where all your fucking AV cables are. Like, if you, I've done a fairly good job of hiding. If you go around and look at the back of my TV, it looks like the fucking Matrix.
Yeah.
Back there, you know how like all the writhing coils and cables and stuff, like where they actually had the birthing pods. That's
except
what the back
dust.
Of my TV looks
squiddy
like.
Squiddy pops out.
Yeah.
Mine is the same way, but I managed to hide it all with clever wiring and nonsense.
There's so many wires these days.
And the thing is, there shouldn't have to be, because you should have – it should be one HDMI cable that goes into your receiver for each device.
Right.
And then one that goes from there to the TV.
Right.
And that's it.
Oh, the most epic troll would be go behind someone's AV system and just snip everything at once.
Oh, my God. That's not troll. That's
just evil.
War crime.
That would be – yeah.
It's
not even unplugging is one thing.
Justifiable
but
homicide is what I would call that.
Cutting everything with one fell swoop.
Like, if I was in the jury and they were like, well, he came in and hacked him up into 50 pieces with an axe.
Right.
And it turns out the reason he did that was that you came in and chopped all the wires behind his entertainment system header. I would be like, yeah, man, I think he got off easy.
But this piece does seem fairly well designed in that the Blu-ray, so there's a lot of cable minimization already in that all the Blu-ray cable stuff is hidden away. Mm-hmm. And then there's a number of HDMI ports in the back. So if you want to add an Xbox, Apple TV, whatever you may add, again, the cable run-throughs are all in such a way that you don't have to look at that ugliness. And so I think, you know, I, like you say, I think especially for like college dorms and stuff, this is a great solution.
It's $1,000 though.
How big is the panel?
24 to 46 inches.
So the $1,000 is not – it's not been announced in the U.S., and that's the comparable price over in Sweden.
So this is just for Europe?
So it's a Euro convenient.
For now.
I can see them bringing it here, though.
Yeah.
Okay. On to the final topic.
Now I want those IKEA meatballs.
It's not
they have some
it.
Good stuff there.
It's not worth driving to Emeryville.
See, this is a side business. Buy the frozen meatballs and have a delivery service.
It's never the same. It's never as good.
Oh, yeah. It's like cafeteria food has a distinct
it's the whole cafeteria
flavor.
Experience.
It is.
You know what? I wanted some sauces. You want sausage and peppers.
I love sausage and peppers.
Yeah.
I'm really good. We ate at a really good Italian restaurant in Philadelphia.
Ooh.
Best sausage and peppers I've ever had.
Yeah,
apparently
they'll
the fennel.
Do them on the sandwich
there, the fennel is what's key.
Yeah. Fennel, it brings out that... licorice-y flavor.
Yeah.
I like fennel.
Yeah.
It's funny because I don't like licorice, but fennel's good. I don't know why. last thing is T-Mobile is getting an image makeover. It's not the network for people with no money and no contracts anymore.
I think it's still the network for people
with
no money.
Is that how they used to market themselves?
No. They used to market themselves, and they still market themselves as the nation's... the nation's biggest 4G network, fake 4G.
It was bullshit 4G. It was HSPA Plus.
Yeah, of course. And that has not changed. But the big makeover now is that the T-Mobile girl, instead of wearing pink dresses, she's wearing pink leather and motorcycle. And they're making a really big deal.
Really?
They spent a ton of money. They're grown up.
I don't care.
They want them to compete with Verizon.
I don't care.
Without improving their network.
Can you hear me now? See, that's compete with, like, that's marketing.
Well, they retired
that's
guy.
That's a 20-year-old, 15-year-old.
They retired that
and
dude.
And you know what? T-Mobile can go fuck itself for its most recent advertising campaign, which I'm seeing a ton of because I'm watching a lot of video, you know, through these online services these days, through Hulu and, you know, Xbox, what have you. And of course, when you do that, the problem is you see the same ad a million.
Oh, yeah.
It's the same ad every fucking commercial break.
And when you're used to a world with DVRs, when you're watching the same ad over and over again, it's just much worse.
And it becomes counterproductive. It makes me hate that product.
Yeah.
So right now, I'm kind of hating T-Mobile. A, because I have to watch this same ad every fucking break, but also because it's a perfect example of how these contracts and plans are a lie. So the ad is the girl in the pink dress is talking to these people that are carrying ridiculously impossible amounts of stuff with them, like all their TV, Blu-ray player, huge disc, movie, music collections. Oh, there's all this stuff I've got to take with me. And she's like, you don't need to do that. You can all fit in your phone because of streaming, unlimited streaming. And then, of course, there is the thing at the bottom that says, after a gigabyte, we're going to slow you down so much it's not going to be possible to stream anything.
Do they actually throttle on T-Mobile? I thought they didn't do
that. After two gigs, I believe, you get throttled the fuck out. You get choked out UFC style.
Please don't ever say choked out on this podcast again.
You're going to get choked out. You're going to be tapping out going, I'm done. I won't stream anymore. I'm sorry.
One last thing that just came up. A Microsoft evangelist. So these are the people Microsoft pay to be community managers, basically.
No, they're more than community. They're the front men for a platform.
Sure. The evangelist for Windows Phone is now confirming that every single Windows Phone that has been released will get the update to the next Windows Phone.
Really?
Which is what, Windows Phone 8?
Windows Phone 8.
Wow.
Apollo.
That's the full update?
They haven't. They didn't say full update.
That's a terrific piece of news. Update. That would make me feel much more confident about going out and getting that Lumia.
Yes.
Because I feel like I'm not going to be obsolete right away. Again, if this in fact turns out to be true.
Well, if the evangelist says it, it's true because it was cycled through.
But this is where Microsoft needs to make sure they get it right, because they need to be strong in the areas where Android is weak.
Right.
And Android is weak on the universality of the experience, feeling confident that your phone is going to be upgradable
to
the next
thing. Here's the thing.
That's where they need to make sure that those concerns are addressed.
Is Microsoft going to make a compromise in terms of the strict – I mean, they're not. I mean, they are going to make that compromise because we can expect that next version of Windows Phone will allow for different resolution screens, different processors, and so there is
I would assume that there'll be another tier that we'll see a higher resolution, bigger CPU, and then I would assume that this version has some stuff that's reduced or something changes as a result,
so it will be tiered in some way. But what we assume was that what Microsoft has said and what I'm allowed to tell you is that all actual devices will get the upgrade to the next major version of Windows Phone, and that's Apollo.
That doesn't confirm that they get the full experience. Yeah.
But you're not going to be stuck on Windows Phone 7.
No. You'll get at worst, you'll get a stripped down version of Windows Phone 8.
I wonder if Microsoft should be kind of doing more synergistic stuff to try and leverage where they're super popular. So
are you trying to get a job as an evangelist?
No, I'm just trying to figure out how they can help themselves, because Windows on desktops, okay, and computers is a big deal. Everyone's going to have that. Should they do a thing?
I don't think that's true either, but okay.
How much of the market do they have?
I think Windows 8 is going to be a slow adoption, same as Vista.
Okay, but I'm just saying, if people were going to upgrade to it, if I'm going to buy Windows 8, could I also get a coupon that gives me half price off a Windows phone as well? You're trying to get me into your ecosystem.
Yeah, they don't.
Anyway,
they can't discount zero.
What they want to do is.
Here's
and what they are doing
use it to get a Windows
is using
phone.
SkyDrive. SkyDrive will unify Windows 7, Windows 8,
and just
Windows Phone.
You know, if there's ways to take the people that are on Windows and trying to encourage them to also extend that experience into their phone.
The other way they're going to do this with apps, because unlike OS X and iOS, where the app ecosystems are separate, on Windows, the App Store is going to be essentially the same on Windows Phone and Windows 8 desktop.
So you know when you have a universal app for iOS where it's iPad and iPhone? You'll have universal apps that are coded a certain way for Windows and Windows Phone.
What would you do right now if you had to go with a different phone OS, if your iPhone was taken away?
Probably go Android.
Really?
Probably buy a Galaxy Nexus, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I feel like the ice cream sandwich experience is probably okay.
You know what? I think I probably would as well.
Because the app situation on Windows Phone is not.
And that's the thing. It's the apps, man. It's about the apps.
You're such an app dealer, Gary.
If I was confident that I could get, I probably would get the Galaxy Nexus. You want the one without any of the bullshit on it. And as long as I kind of feel like I'm going to have the updates when they come out, and having the Nexus phone is going to do that for me, then I just want the apps, and I don't want to be the third guy at the table that can't play Draw Something or Angry Birds or whatever with you guys, because they just, no one's bothering to put it on my little operating system.
I'm going to say less so the apps and more the services that those companies provide, in terms of iCloud versus G Drive and SkyDrive. And because most of my documents are in Google Docs, I would use Android. If more of my documents were in SkyDrive, and the SkyDrive is perfectly fine, the OneNote online stuff and the Office Lite stuff is great, and they're improving that, and obviously it'll be integrated more in Windows 8. If I was more in that platform, then I would consider Windows.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing for me is I'm a heavy Gmail user. The Google Mail client on Android is really good.
Google Mail client's fine on Windows Phone.
It's okay, but it's not Sparrow.
Sparrow's on iOS.
No, I know. I'm just saying the Sparrow is the closest analog to the Android Mail client that I've used. Sparrow for iOS. We can talk about that.
Google has you on in their ecosystem.
Yeah, I mean, Google has me trapped. It's only because iOS stuff integrates pretty well that I've been able to escape in that small, tiny area. Do you guys want to play some music and talk about what we've been testing?
Yeah.
I'm a little bummed that didn't wub.
Yeah, see, now you want it.
I want the wub.
You want it for every single transition?
I want more wub. I don't know.
That should be the challenge now, is that all the music has to have the wubs.
So Norm and I cooked a steak in a cooler with a blowtorch the other day.
It was one of the best steaks I've ever eaten.
This is the sous vide?
Safeway. Yeah, the sous vide steak.
It was unbelievable.
So one of the things, we were talking to the Modernist Cuisine guys, Max Billet and Scott... I can't remember his last name. It's a long last name. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Basically,
they said, hey, you don't need a $500 thing to do sous vide if you're only going to do it for a couple of hours. You know, if you want to cook some short ribs for 72 hours, yes, you should get the expensive thing. If you just want to cook a steak, you can do it for an hour or two, or even up to 4 or 5 in just a normal cooler with hot water and either boil safe Ziploc bags, which are labeled that way in the store.
You gotta really Ziploc them tight.
You're real careful with them, yeah. Or you can, if you have a vacuum sealer, which is a relatively inexpensive thing and something that I have had for years and have gotten a ton of use out of, you can use that and just chuck the steaks in the cooler.
Do you have a recommendation for the best vacuum sealer? It's something that I know it's useful, but I never see myself buying, because
isn't this you see on TV where you can vacuum your clothes into plastic bags?
No, clothes, this is for food. those things are real dumb. I think that's got to be the best way to wrinkle your clothes ever.
But these are the things that you don't get freezer burn, right?
But the idea is,
I've seen the vacuum food bags.
Yeah, the idea is more that you put your food in there and it stays good longer without having to freeze it.
Right.
Because I
always do this when I seal up a Ziploc bag. You try to press as much air suck out air as you out. Can. I don't just suck it out.
But why not? You put a little straw in there.
I didn't take it to that degree. Oh. Yeah. But you don't ever want to put like a Ziploc bag in there where it feels puffy because you trapped a lot of air in there.
No,
right?
That's like
a mistake. You're not helping yourself.
No. What the vacuum sealer, that's exactly what the vacuum sealer does. I did a little bit of research. It seems like the general consensus online is that the Food Saver brand is the best one. They come in a bunch of different sizes.
And the bags are cheap.
The bags are relatively inexpensive. The one that I got, I think, was $25 with bags, with like a
can you not get a pretty good approximation by doing the thing? You jam a straw in there and give it a good suck and then close it up.
I would assume so. I mean, there's a bacteria,
because I don't want to be. I mean, you're talking about like actually putting like a vacuum thing on it, right?
No.
A motor.
No, you watch the video. It's really easy.
Yeah. So there's a. It's basically a little device, and it's about the size of. It's like smaller than a roll of wax paper or Saran wrap or something.
Okay.
And basically, what you do is you. It's a thing that has a vacuum pump in it and like a little heating strip.
Oh, no, I've seen these. Yeah, okay.
So you mash it down and it seals the end of the bag with the heating strip. Yeah. And then you put the food in and do the same thing on the other end, except for you suck the air out first.
Right.
And the machine does it. And it, yeah. it, all you have to do is All you have to do is line it up right and push the thing down.
Right,
it's really straightforward.
Right. Okay, and then you throw it in some hot water.
Throw it in some hot water. Yeah. And one of the things that Max said is if you're doing fish, you can just do it in your sink. Like fish doesn't only needs to be cooked like 120 degrees most times.
Uh-huh.
So if you're doing like a delicate piece of sole or something like that, you can literally put it in the bag, fill your sink with hot water, chuck it in there, leave it for an hour, and come back and it's done.
Okay.
You're going to lose a lot of temperature in that sink.
Yeah, but for the – yes, but it's okay is what he said. I don't want to – I don't – specifics. Okay. But he said like a piece of salmon, there's no problem doing it like that. For steak, like generally if you want medium rare, which is what I like, I know that this looked – the steak that we did looked much, much more rare on camera. I think part of that was just color balance is weird when you're shooting meat on video.
Oh, fine.
But it was pink. It was
how long did it cook
it was,
for?
We left it in for like an hour and 15 minutes probably.
All right. It's reasonable.
You can do it for 2 hours. You can do it for 45 minutes depending on how thick the steak is.
Yeah. And how do you know when it's done? You're just confident
so
in
time,
the science?
You look at the time. Yeah, you trust that the time is
you're
right.
Not taking like a temperature reading or
well,
anything.
You can't because you have to pierce the bag.
Right.
You're just maintaining the temperature of the water in the cooler.
Yeah, you put a thermometer consistent. in the water. So that so you know that if it stayed in long enough for the heat to suffuse through the thing, then you're good. There's benefits to leaving it in longer up to a certain point because it'll break down some of the connective tissue in the meat and help to reduce the fat some so that it's a little less chewy.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's all you do. And then when it's done, you either put it on a hot skillet on a grill, or we did the showy kind of silly way and used a blowtorch to do it, like a plumber's blowtorch.
That's the step I would skip.
Yeah, I mean, if you're doing it for a bunch of people, the thing to do is just get your grill crazy hot, pull the steaks out of the bags, chuck them straight on the grill, flip it.
When it comes out of the cooler, it doesn't look particularly appetizing, right?
It's perfectly edible.
It looks like medium rare meat without a crust.
Without the crust, but the crust is the best
part. The crust is what it's all about.
Exactly. Yeah. So then the challenge becomes making the crust without overcooking the rest of the meat.
Okay.
The benefit of doing it this way, though, is that you end up with a piece of meat that is medium rare all the way through, except for the tiniest fraction of crust.
If you still get the flavored crust, yeah, that sounds pepper
good.
And salt.
Yeah, it's pretty good. If you've been to a fancy steakhouse in the last 5 years, then you've had a piece of sous-vide meat. You just may not have known it.
Mm.
Probably,
now I want steak.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really good steak. I want to go to like Morton's and have them bring me different cuts of steak and I say, I want that one.
do you do the plate where they bring the raw thing out and you say, oh, I want that piece of meat right there?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you go to a place like that, then that's just what's going to happen. Yeah,
I've not been to a Morton's in years.
Morton's will bring you, and Morton's is a decent steakhouse. They'll bring you it's like a big wooden tray with all the different cuts, and they shine a flashlight. Or sometimes the board has one of those little twist lights on it.
Yeah,
they point at different things to show you the different cuts of meat, and you pick out the one that you want.
Interesting. Oh.
Well, that's like, I mean, how much money did you spend on those steaks?
Like $20.
$20.
They were cheap steaks.
Oh, I mean, a really good fillet.
They were nice, big, thick steaks, but they were not like choice.
Well, like maybe like a nice peppercorn sauce. I know, like real steak purists don't want to put anything on theirs at all, but I like a nice sauce.
Well, I mean, sometimes it's nice to have that on the side. I would
with some nice cream spinach.
Cream spinach all day long.
Little baked potato, maybe.
Yeah, that sounds good. All of this sounds good.
We should go get.
I don't know how the Bombcast guys do this at late every day because they always record from like 4 to 6. We're recording really late for us today, and I'm like, all I can think about right now is dinner.
Does it even matter though? It seems like no matter what time of the day we record, there's always we're always thinking about the next meal.
This is a good point.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just us. Norm, you played the Star Trek VCR game.
Oh, my goodness. I had actually never played this game before.
I played it, I think, once.
And it was incredible.
Explain the game.
So the VCR games, before CD-ROM games, it's in very limited interactivity. And we actually played two of these games last night. Played a Star Trek VCR game and also this game called Nightmare. And basically, you have a VCR, a tape. You buy a kit, so it's a board game.
Yeah, it comes in a box like Clue,
just
or
like Clue.
Catan or anything like
and
that.
And as opposed to like Digital Clue or the other what was the other one Dark Tower.
Okay,
right. And so, you know, the digital element isn't on the board; it's in the VCR. So you put a tape in. It's 60-minute tape because that's the maximum length of an old VCR, and you get a whole story. And the games are all time-based, so you have 60 minutes basically to play the game until the tape runs out. And
so the tape is constantly running?
Tape is constantly running, and there's a timer. Hmm. So they don't shoot 60 minutes of video. For the Star Trek one specifically, the scenario is that a Klingon, a renegade Klingon warrior has taken over the Enterprise. The Enterprise is docked.
This is the Enterprise D?
Enterprise D.
Okay.
It's docked at a spaceport for maintenance. So it's kind of like that.
Like Starship Mine.
Starship Mine, exactly, right? Except instead of beam going through the ship, right? It's just being down for maintenance. But there are a few crew members aboard, and you play one of six crew members aboard the ship,
okay,
maintaining the ship. But a Klingon warrior has boarded the ship and taken command of engineering and has all the access codes. And it is your job to get to him before he takes the ship back to Kronos so he can start a galactic war.
Okay? Well, that's not cool.
Because he wants to sacrifice himself, in the glory of battle.
Is it the same scenario every time?
It's the same tape every time. It's not choose your own adventure. So it's limited replayability.
Okay. But I mean, like Lloyd says, usually you play the board games five
times. Yeah, exactly. You're never going to play it more than 10 times, and it's always fun to revisit after a couple of years. So as you're playing the game, you're playing with actual board pieces. In this game, you play as individual members of the crew, and you're trying to collect these Icelinar chips aboard the ship, and you gotta search rooms.
Those are the things that Data plugs in really, really fast, right?
Computer chips with access codes.
Okay.
But at random moments, the screen will stop, or the game will, the VCR will cut from the countdown clock, which is like the viewfinder, to the Klingon warrior, who's played by Robert O'Reilly, who played Gowron.
So he's not playing Gowron.
He's not playing Gowron.
Oh, that's
playing
confusing.
So are they saying all Klingons look alike? So racist.
Yeah, he's a versatile actor. And he taunts you, but he taunts you based on where you are in the game, the position you are. So he'll say, the player or the crew member with the most Icelinar chips so far, answer me. And then you have to talk to TV.
Oh, this sounds terrible.
You have to say, yes, Commander. Yes, Captain.
But why would you be nice to him?
Because he's taunting you. He's playing a game. He's taunting you. And then he'll say, oh, I now put you in a stasis field. And then your character on the ship gets put in a stasis field.
So you can't move? Do you have to, like, freeze?
Yeah, or no, in the game, your board piece gets put and you can't move.
Is your board piece, is it animated? Oh, okay.
And then we'll
say, is this like a Following a Path game, like Game of Life or something like that?
It's kind of like a Following a Path game where you go around the ship.
Oh,
so there's a fixed path where you go around the ship and you roll a die. And he'll say, you know, roll the die, and if you get, you know, four or higher, then you get the piece. But if not, then – but it is hilarious and awesome. And it is incredible.
Is it Terra awesome? Like really bad and awesome?
No, it's genuinely
awesome. It's not Terra
bad? It's not Terra bad. No.
Sounds
terrible. It's genuinely awesome.
Hey, can I ask a question?
You just did.
Can I ask a third question after the question that I just asked now?
It's your podcast.
Okay, cool. When did SMH start standing for Shake My Head?
I thought it stood for So Much Hate.
Well, that's what I thought too. But people have started using SMH as Shake My Head.
I think Shake My Head is the PG version.
Yeah, it's like the less angry version.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Why not?
They're different. Yeah.
But they don't mean the same thing.
Well, they both signal disapproval. One is a mild disapproval and one is quite an angry disapproval.
Mm.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Chloe Banez.
Nothing wrong with that.
Chloe Banez doesn't shake her head. Okay, so that sounds fun, I guess.
It's not nearly complicated and arcane enough for Will.
Yeah.
Speaking of complicated and arcane, Gina and I played Nightfall. Because, you know, it came out for iOS a couple weeks ago. And, like, I tried to play it and couldn't figure it out from the iOS game because you couldn't see how all the pieces moved.
Uh-huh.
So we got the physical version, which I had ordered ages ago. We just never played because Gina's back's been fucked up. And the game's really good. Like, it's weird. There's a lot of kind of pieces moving along, but it's less complex than, say, Thunderstone or something like that as far as deck building games go.
Okay.
And there's some kind of neat mechanics about it. Maybe we'll talk about it. Maybe I'll write a post about it or something. I'd be interested to play it with four or five people and see how it works with more than two people, because I think it would be much better with more people, which is nice in those kinds of games. Gary, you wanted to talk about the Avengers, I believe.
Oh, I just as like a little adjunct to my rant from a couple of weeks ago about how content is kind of arbitrarily restricted in our digital streaming age.
There's nothing people love more than an adjunct.
Hey, look,
to a
it's my own fault, but I imagine there are many people in my position. I never got around to seeing Captain America or Thor.
You never saw either of those?
I enjoyed Captain America.
Never saw
Thor,
either
so
of
much.
Them. I don't get to Other the theater around. As much as I should. But now the Avengers is coming out.
Really? You liked Thor better than Captain America?
Yes. Absolutely.
Is this because you're a comic book nerd or because you like movies that suck?
Now that the Avengers is coming out, I feel like I, in order to appreciate that movie as much as I would like to, I should see all the previous chapters involving the different characters. Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, so.
Synergy.
And AMC's doing that very cool event where you can marathon all the movies, right? But
all
I don't want to.
All the way back.
I don't necessarily want to go to a theater and sit there all day.
I thought
and
it was
watch.
All the way back to the Hulk.
I think it's Incredible Hulk.
Iron Man.
The most recent one. Iron Man 2, Thor, Captain America.
Five
so
movies.
That pretty much covers everything. I just want to see the fill in the missing pieces.
Yeah.
And I figured it'd be relatively easy in this day and age. Just go on iTunes or whatever and rent each movie for like $5 each. And then I'm all caught up and I'm ready for the Avengers in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Yep.
Would that it were that simple.
Never is that simple.
I go onto iTunes to discover that both Thor and Captain America are now purchase only.
For how much?
Yeah.
$14.99 instead of the usual HD movie rental at like $5.
Yeah. You don't want to keep the movies.
Is this Marvel gouging me? Who can say? But all I know is they used to be available for rental. They have now been removed from the rental option. Mm. And they now would have to buy both of those movies to get caught up.
Is Iron Man 2 still on Netflix?
Yes. And so I now find myself going down exactly the same digital rabbit hole that I was complaining about a couple of weeks ago. This is the real version of this, where I'm looking at Comcast On Demand, I'm looking at Zune, I'm looking at Vudu, I'm looking at Epix, I'm looking at Hulu, I'm looking at Netflix, every fucking service that's out there, trying to patchwork together some solution where I can watch both of these movies legitimately and legally without having to buy them. Because I only need to...
Yeah.
I would rather...
Squirrel.
I, of course, would... Before I commit to buying a movie, I would like to see it first. Maybe I will buy it, but I want to at least rent it first and decide if I like it and would want to see it again. No, not available. Can't do that.
Yeah.
And it's very, very annoying. And I got people on Twitter trying to help me. Oh, well, you can sign up for this service, get a free 14-day trial and watch it this way. And like, again, I shouldn't have to jump through these hoops.
No, I couldn't agree more.
Shouldn't they? In a situation like this where they do have an opportunity for people to go back and watch these movies, like
they should be making it easy for us.
Maybe I never would have got around to watching Thor, say. But I'm going to now because the Avengers movie is going to make me want to watch it so that I'm fully, you know, invested in these characters. No, you pissed away an opportunity there by trying to gouge me for the purchase price. You lost the rental that you would otherwise have made.
I wonder if Gina knows when she's chasing the dog around the
Chloe
living room.
Chloe is definitely having a total spaz out.
Chloe, this is the playing hour. Usually around 6:30 is when I come home from work.
Yeah, that seems to be the case.
And Chloe plays the chasing game.
Anyway, look, I'm not going to go on a big rant. This is the perfect example of the kind of thing that is annoying people so many. Mm-hmm. So, and again, as much as I don't agree with it, this is why some people are turning to piracy. Because the legitimate mean to acquire the content is becoming so deliberately obfuscated, and we've got to jump through so many hoops and there's so many arbitrary restrictions that people are getting pissed off and turning to crime. Basically,
yeah, I don't. I'm surprised that there's no option to rent all five of those movies once.
And the other
thing, they should be like an Avengers mega pack where you can get a deal on renting all the movies together.
All four or all five.
Yeah. Or not just having theaters.
Or just the one, just
set a day
gaps.
Every weekend, you know, do a group chat where everyone can watch those movies at home, at comfort at home, right? And then do some type of Xbox chat.
It's annoying as piss.
And, you know, I even went to look to see what the Blu-ray cost was on these.
Right.
Because I was curious after you had said that. And they're all super expensive now.
Yeah.
Like, the only way to get Captain America when I looked last week was the 3-disc combo pack, because the normal 2-disc Blu-ray, the one that's the Blu-ray and the DVD, was out of stock and was only from some price gouger.
It's greed.
It's really sleazy. It's
pure and simple. And it's made me really annoyed now because I'm either going to have to suck it up and buy these movies, which, again, I don't think I should have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Or go into the Avengers, you know, with some pieces missing, which I don't want to do either.
You do Redbox.
Oh, really?
Oh, I have a free Redbox account because some idiot signed up with my email.
Maybe
address.
I can ride my penny farthing down to the local Redbox and insert a shiny shilling.
Your original.
Into that
ride
machine.
The original.
Yeah.
Have either of you ever, you've never Redboxed, I know, Gary, but have you Redboxed?
No, I've not.
Yeah, neither have I. I think we should try it just so we know what's going on.
No, they're pretty strict about it. It's like a one-day rental and you have to be,
you have to take it back?
That's the whole point.
I thought it was like a burnable DVD that exploded or something.
You return it to the machine.
Are you kidding?
If I Redbox
it back,
that's the thing. If I Redbox it, I know I'm going to wind up buying the movie anyway because that disc ain't never going back.
Yeah, it's going to be
that's the whole point. You put your credit card information in with your account.
Oh, yeah.
And so you rent it.
So if you don't return it, they'll just charge you for the whole price.
Do you still have Netflix discs?
No, I quit that shit years ago.
Yes, I do.
What is the disc that you have?
Sunshine.
Did you get it when it was a new release?
No, I got it a year ago, though.
Oh, that's bad.
I have U571, which is a purchase from Never Sending It Back.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great movie with Keith David or it David
is,
Keith.
I can't it is. The thing is, it's so easy to cancel the disc.
But you have to find the disc and send it back.
I got to send it back first before it cancels. I know where it is, too. I just don't know where the mailbox is around my house.
So I'm very annoyed.
Oh, my God.
I don't know where the mailbox
is. The worst.
Is.
There's a mailbox right down the street from me. You can bring it next week for the podcast.
I'm not going to remember that. It used to be where when we had an office to go in, I could go to the office and put in the outgoing mail.
You know, we had an office for a year until a month ago, basically. You know, can we talk about the squirrel? After last week's squirrel incident and the yelling on Friday, the day after the podcast.
Yeah.
I was here working at home by myself. Gina had gone out and was out and about. And
this is like your version of the Raven.
It kind of is. Tip, tip, tapping at my door.
Nevermore.
So I was standing here, you know, wearing my comfortable jeans. It was casual Friday.
What does that mean, comfortable jeans?
It means
is that euphemism for not jeans?
No, no, no.
Or
it is. It means the oldest pair of jeans that I own. That still are coherent.
If you are at home and you want to wear something comfortable, why do you go with jeans, period?
These jeans are soft like pajamas.
They're not those pajama jeans.
No, they are not pajama. They're not jammy jeans.
Okay.
They are probably 12 year old jeans.
I don't think of jeans as like some comfortable lounging around the house.
Well,
especially if they've got like metal bits in them and stuff. Like, it's not always super comfortable.
The thing is, the problem with this house is because the front door is right on the living room. Like, there's no way for me to dodge people who knock on the door. So when, like, the religious cultists or whatever come to the door and want to try to convert me, like, if the TV or music is on, they know I'm here.
All the more reason to answer the door with your cock out. That'll get them straight, back down the driveway.
I live in a neighborhood. I'm a homeowner. I have to be part of the neighborhood team.
Oh, you have to be respectable.
Yeah, anyway. And the thing is, the moment I'm wearing sweatpants on Friday at 11:30 is when like four people are going to come to the door, one after the other, including like some 8-year-old trying to sell cookies or something. So I'm standing in the living room and I looked out the back and I was like, oh, it's that fucking squirrel again.
Same one?
Same one. The black. Okay. It's a black, black-tailed squirrel. I open the door.
white whale.
I open the door. I charge out and I'm yelling. I'm looking for something to throw.
You're angry, dude. What were you holding?
I wasn't holding anything.
Oh, you're looking around.
No phone.
You jumped out and then you looked around for like a pine cone.
Yeah.
To throw at the squirrel.
I was looking for something to huck at the squirrel and I pulled the door shut behind me because the dog was in here. I didn't want her to shoot out in the backyard. And then I realized that we changed the doorknobs about a month ago and we used to have doorknobs that you couldn't open if they were locked. So you couldn't lock yourself out. The new doorknobs do not function in that way. So 3 hours later, when Gina came home, I got to go back inside. And the squirrel won.
So in the epic chess game that is playing out between you and this squirrel.
Checkers at best.
What's interesting is, we talked about this, but you know, obviously our famous raccoon chat.
Yeah.
About who, you know, you fighting a bag full of angry squirrels. We always looked at it as, I think part of the reason why you've been willing to take on this squirrel fight is that you kind of feel like, because you've spent so much time thinking about that you have some kind of tactical advantage, that you've prepared more.
Me versus one squirrel, no problem.
But the reality is, well, apparently it is a problem, because the reality is it's not just about like a straight up throwdown. It's much more a cerebral battle of wits. Which you currently are losing.
The problem is going outside. That's the squirrel's.
I entered his world.
Yeah, it's not the box. It's not the home. Your domain.
When I was locked out, and I was thinking about having to explain to Gina that I'd let myself be locked out of the house by a fucking squirrel, I figured out how to gain access to the garage.
See, that to me, in that moment, the horrible moment when you realize you've locked yourself out, for me at that moment would be much less about I'm locked out and like, how long am I going to be out here and what a fucking pain. It would be the humiliation of knowing that you just got fucking outwitted by a rodent.
Yes. Thank you, Gary. That is exactly what I was feeling. You captured the essence of my moment.
That you pit your wits
against something
with a brain size of a peanut at best.
No.
You were found wanting.
It was purely instinctual. I saw him eating my bird feed, taking food away from perfectly good birds.
Yeah.
And I acted from a place of instinct. I learned the lesson.
The squirrel has got the measure of you enough to know that's how you're going to react?
Do you know what the squirrel was thinking? Oh boy, free food. Look, I can jump from the fence to the bird feeder. Nom, 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 nom. How do squirrels sit upside down that long? Anyway, So as I was trying to break back into my house, I tried to fashion a lockpick because I thought, oh, here's a solid core piece of copper wire. I have a pair of pliers. I can take the copper, take the core off the cladding off the wire.
Worst idea I've ever heard.
I jam the wire into the door and I'm picking
it.
I can feel
lock pick contest loser.
Hey, you beat me by one lock.
Vin Diesel said, winning's winning.
Winning is winning. If not first, you're last. Copper wire, it turns out, is too ductile. It's too
malleable.
Too malleable. It doesn't bend. It bends too much to use as lockpicks. So that was a wash. And then the only window that was open was the one above our high in our bathroom, above the cast iron tub. And as I was dangling from my gut over the 6-foot drop down to the cast iron tub, I got to thinking about ways I didn't want to die.
You were on the roof?
No. Into the window. On the second floor.
No, you got onto the roof. Though.
No, I got it.
The side window. Okay, yeah, not a skylight. Okay,
not a skylight. And I was looking down at the tub below me and thinking about what I could grab to stop my fall on the way down.
No, that's easy slip and break.
Yeah, and I was like, no, I don't want to break my neck or my arm on the way down,
or even a toe.
So I just pulled a chair out in the backyard and acted like I was taking a nap until Gina got home.
Oh, okay.
She totally bought
Chloe
it.
Didn't help.
No, Chloe was sitting inside. Just the funny part about this whole story is Chloe is just watching me like, hey, what did you do, asshole?
So how long were you stuck outside?
Like 3 hours, maybe four. I don't know, from 11:30 until 2, 3.
Wow.
Ish. The best part was when I was dangling into the bathroom window trying to figure out a way to get my feet in first when the window is right at the eaves. And the dog just comes into the bathroom and looks at me like, what the fuck are you doing in the window? And kind of shakes her head and then just walks away.
So the scoreboard 2-0 right now is not looking good, right, for you.
I'm down 2.
The squirrel is basically, it's a shutout completely.
However,
so far.
No. I struck back this weekend. I went to.
You killed it. You ate it.
Yeah, we
think you also have to take into account the fact that simply by engaging this squirrel on its level, I mean, you've lost immediately.
I haven't engaged it on its level. I'm not sitting out there on top of the bird feeder fighting it for food. I went out and used tools and money to buy something that will defeat the squirrel.
But you could so easily just say, this is beneath me. It's a squirrel. It's eaten some seeds. Who gives a fuck? I'm going to go read some philosophy. But no, instead you go down to the squirrel's level and say, right, we're going to make this a thing.
No. All I did was got something that the squirrel is going to find distasteful.
Is this the capsaicin thing?
Capsaicin.
So this was an interesting tip that we saw right on the forums, that apparently squirrels don't have the same taste receptors as birds. So you can put basically hot sauce into the seed mix and the birds will be okay with
birds
it. The squirrel
birds
won't.
Are hard.
The squirrel will go, ooh, this is something I don't want and won't come back.
So I got industrial strength capsaicin from the hardware store, mixed it in with the bird seed.
Why would you get that at the hardware store?
Because it was sold in the same section as the bird seed and I needed a new bird seed.
Oh, so this
fucking squirrel
so
has been eating all my bird seed.
So this is enough of a thing that they actually sell it with the bird seed.
It is a perennial problem.
Why not simply sell bird seed that already is infused with the capsaicin?
Well, you could do that, but the capsaicin bird seed was really expensive.
But so they do already offer that.
Yeah, it was like $20 for 5 pounds versus
that's
$5
squirrel-proof
for 5 pounds.
Bird seed, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's one of those products that's for people who are bad at math. Because the packet of capsaicin, which is good for 25 pounds of feed, and the bag of bird feed were half the price of the 5-pound bag of bird feed with the capsaicin.
And so did it work?
Do you see any squirrels in my bird feeder?
Not at this moment, but I haven't been. No. I mean, so the squirrel's not been back since?
Squirrel came, had one taste, and went away.
Okay. So basically, after a rough first half,
Chloe doesn't eat bird seed from underneath the bird feeder anymore. Either.
You went into the locker rooms at halftime looking.
I came back
with a mountain to climb.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
You came back out in the second half strong.
I might not get a third shot at him.
But what if you're simply breeding a super resistant breed of squirrel that can deal with the hot flavors?
I'm comfortable taking that risk.
Nature's just going to adapt around this problem.
That's when we go to the armed response and get the motion-controlled paintball gun. Let's see. What else do we have on the list here?
Let's talk about Journey.
You want to talk about Journey?
I did my homework.
Did you finally play it?
I beat it.
Oh,
wow. One sitting.
Congratulations, Jen. Welcome to 2 weeks ago.
Well, it came out over a month ago, but yeah.
Yeah. It's good, right?
It's wonderful.
Yay! I'm glad to hear that Norm liked it.
Who wouldn't like it?
Wouldn't like it? What do you think's wrong with it?
Like it?
Do you feel like you went on an emotional journey?
Yes. I didn't realize.
Spoilers? Talk us through your experience. Yeah, let's go through in a spoiler-free fashion.
Spoiler-free? Okay.
Well, for people that still haven't played it. Although I kind of feel like if you haven't played it yet, it's your fault.
Before I played it, all I had seen from it was was a interesting looking character walking through sand in the screenshots.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And the very first level, or the very first few moments of the game, you start on top of this dune and you walk down, and even the animation.
And there's no context, no intro, nothing right?
It just says start a new journey, and you press the start button. And you walk down this small hill in the desert, and the animation of the sand is wonderful.
Yeah, there was an interesting piece on how they did that sand technology. Oh, but yeah, it's beautiful.
Gorgeous. And then when you walk uphill the next dune and you slow down, just like a little detail there. Yeah.
And the way that you kind of slide down the other side of dunes and stuff. Yeah. It's so beautiful.
So I felt like I could just explore that.
Yeah. It's floaty.
It's fun. It's fun just to wander this environment for a while.
Of course, the game gets much better, and it's a whole journey, of course. The way they tell the story is genius.
Yes.
It is a puzzle game, and the puzzles are not hard at all. It's not really a very simple game. It's not a tremendous platformer.
Barely a puzzle game.
So I want to talk about the multiplayer element. Because I've only played it once, and I do want to play it again.
So how many companions did you encounter?
That's the thing. I didn't realize it was multiple companions until the very end when they tell you in the credits.
When Gina played it, she didn't realize that they were people.
Well, I knew they were just
because she didn't follow the news and everything.
Right.
She just thought it was like the game trying to push her in the right direction.
Because I didn't start off with a companion. I was only until maybe like 20 minutes in.
But once you get into that first area,
I mean, there's a point at which there's a certain first period of the game you can't meet anyone.
And most people listening to this podcast will have already played it or read about it and know that the multiplayer component is not up to you to control at all. If you're connected to PlayStation Network and someone else is playing Journey, they will just drop in your game.
Yeah.
And
you don't know, you can't arrange to play with someone else. No, you don't know who you're playing with.
And I don't know whether the game decides that you are no longer playing with that companion or if you can play with one companion if you both stick to it.
You can, if you choose to. But
I don't think you can stick that close to people because there's places in the game that's hard to stick
together. The game is replacing companions, I think, when players drop out or you become too far separated from one another.
I don't know what that mechanism is, and it's very seamless, so I didn't notice it at all. There was a difference because I did see the character look different, had a longer scarf thing. So I didn't know if that was like a New Game Plus mechanic or but the cool thing, and I've read a little about this, is that the only mode of communication you have is that chime.
The little church.
And so you develop this little Morse code communication with what companion you're playing with.
Given how limited the communication is, it's amazing how much you can communicate. Well,
people use the chirps very differently. Because I had one guy that was, I think, might have been schizophrenic or something, because he was using the chirps in a dramatically different way than anyone else I played with in both the times I've been through the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of weird. I don't even know how to describe it. But he was basically, he was almost playing melodies more than, because like,
I never got that.
Like ours were, most of my guys were like, you know, loud to draw attention, to draw attention, or boom, just, boom, 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 if you needed to get someplace or something. This guy was like, it was crazy. He was like beating
it took
beats.
It took me a while to realize that it could be used as a communication system, but I was fortunate enough on my first run through to play with I had two companions, and at least one of them had played through many times before and was quite experienced. And I realized that he would go, if I was getting lost or stuck in an environment, because I'm not a great puzzle solver, even though it's not tremendously challenging, I can still get stuck sometimes to things that would be obvious to other people. And so I was wandering around a little bit lost, and I realized that the other player was standing where he needed me to go,
mm-hmm.
and was chirping to try and say, over here, over here. And there was another period where I was trying to get up some steps that the other player had already navigated. And he can go on his own without me if he wants. But instead, he was kind of at the top of the steps, like chirping away, going, come on, you can do it. And again, this, even with the tremendously limited amount of interaction, you can divine personalities and intentions in other players. And very, very clever.
And there's one moment, because I played with a companion, or could have been multiple companions, up until a part of the game, a dark part of the game, I'll say.
Mm-hmm.
And when that level loaded, my companion disappeared. And I guess what must have happened is that whoever I was playing with either disconnected or left. But I thought the game had intentionally separated us
for a certain moment.
I felt very lonely at that point because it was a dark part of the game.
I don't think I had a companion in that part of the game either.
And
that's the great thing, is that because it is often such a lonely, barren environment that companion become so important to you that when you are separated from them, you do feel kind of lost and, oh, yeah, and alone. Well, and it's very emotional.
And part of the way the jumping and chirping stuff works, you like having that other person right there with you force multiplies both of you. So you're both much more capable travelers.
But yeah, the reward for that game, there are moments of just euphoria in that game.
Well, it's, I mean, and there, and again, wonderful, without giving too much away, there is a specific moment very near the end of the game of...
You're giving too much away.
Okay. But I know what you mean. There is almost this kind of transcendent kind of moment at the end of the game where you
even middle of the game. There's great...
It's just glorious.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was not at all what I was expecting.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful, wonderful little emotional ride.
And it's perfect length.
Yeah.
Played in one sitting.
Yeah.
Hour, 45 minutes. And I can
and
go
it
back.
Does feel kind of epic for a game that's only 2 hours long, really. I mean, you really do feel like you've been through an experience.
Well, the storytelling mechanism.
Yeah, it's very clever.
The little cutscenes they have is... Yeah, really.
And again, I've not to belabor it, I cannot say enough about the soundtrack. The soundtrack is such a huge
It's very subtle, and it builds up.
Yeah.
And there are familiar themes by the end of the game that you recognize, and it is part of that experience, that revelation. At the
end. It's all very intentional, I would say. Did you guys read the Jonathan Blow story in The Atlantic a few weeks ago?
Good.
I looked at it briefly because I know Jeff Green posted something. He was annoyed by the...
What was he annoyed by?
He kind of felt like it was, you know, hey, games can be art, and there are developers out there that are producing.
Well, there was
art.
A lot of that, yeah.
Yeah, and Jeff, I think Jeff's feeling is that games, every time there's an article in the press saying that games can be art, that we're kind of apologizing for the art form, and like,
oh no,
we should be past this now, and we don't need to keep convincing ourselves that games can be art.
Very fair.
We know they can be.
Very, very fair. But it wasn't written for us.
Yeah, this was written for
the Atlantic audience. People who all they know about games, Call of Duty and Halo, and maybe
Super
they've
Mario.
Heard of, you know, Minecraft.
Yeah, I mean, I think the mainstream consciousness is a little bit behind the real enthusiast, but I kind of, it annoys me the same way as those kind of, hey, girls can be geeks too. And like, yeah, we
those
fucking
are
know.
Stories too.
Yeah. The problem with that, I mean, wasn't that, like, it was so simplified and in terms of the dichotomy of games that are for the mass audience and artistic games that basically, you know, said that we have a world where there's Modern Warfare and there's Braid and discounted and no talk about other indie developers who maybe aren't part of the big system and maybe have different aspirations.
Oh yeah. I mean, if you look at one of the things that was interesting, you haven't seen Indie Game the movie yet, but one of the things that was interesting about that was talking about the kind of motivations, finding out what the motivations of Edmund and what's his name? I can't remember the other guy's name. The Super Meat Boy guys.
Yeah.
The Team Meat guys versus, say, interviews with Jonathan Blow or Phil Fish, who both have lofty aspirations and are trying to make games with deep subtext and all that. Yeah. Whereas the Team Meat guys, I mean, they were telling a story and it was a personal story and that's great. But their primary goal was clearly to make an incredibly tight platformer. And I think everyone involved succeeded. You haven't played Fez yet, have you, Gary?
No, I've got it queued up. It's going to be my next thing.
Yeah,
I don't like it as much as
I've heard nothing but good things. But I worry that I could be a victim of the overhype thing.
It's a game. Just pay attention when you play the game. That's all. That's all I'm going to say. It's really good. It's worth playing.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And it takes a little while to get going. Like if you don't get in past the first couple of hours. Like if you're playing and you're thinking, oh, this is just a platformer, then keep playing because it opens up pretty dramatically, like a little way in.
Okay. Well, that's why I thought Braid did very good. Is it drops you into a world where, okay, yeah, I'm in a platform game, but then almost immediately, oh wait, the rules are different.
Yeah.
And it did a very good job of introducing
and kept changing dramatically the entire way through.
And I think people can play Braid and enjoy it just for its mechanics. And
are you talking about Soldier Boy?
Not just Soldier Boy, but I think a lot of people played Braid without caring about, you know, the allegory at the end and just, you know, had fun playing it and liked the story, liked the art, but didn't need, you know, all that.
It's like anything else.
Yeah, the literature and.
Right. Well, and again, no spoilers for people that still haven't played Braid, but that final level, the design and the narrative are, you know, they do really fuse into a very kind of artistic concoction.
Love that ending. But what Jonathan Blow would say is that wasn't the point of the game, even. You have to even dig deeper.
Yeah, but the interesting – so this rolls back to the Atlantic thing. The interesting thing about the Atlantic thing wasn't the games as art business. It was the deep look at Jonathan Blow And like the apparently the guy who wrote it seemed to spend a lot of time with him just kind of while he was being Jonathan Blow. And he's I had no idea how Jonathan Blow is.
Well, he's very Jonathan Blow.
Yeah, he's the most Jonathan Blow.
But that's fine. And you can do a profile on Jonathan Blow and get all that interesting stuff from without putting him on a giant pedestal.
Well, he puts himself on a pedestal, dude.
Then let him do it.
Right.
And don't do it for him.
Right. Well, that's...
Don't say he's going to make the Citizen Kane of games.
Well, they didn't say he was going to. They said he was trying to. It's an important distinction. He may have said he was making this. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Last couple things. Romo.
What's that?
Romo is a smartphone robot. And Joey's playing with it right now because he's using it on his Android phone. But basically, you hook it up to your phone. You plug it, you know, it's like a little thing with tank treads. You plug your phone into it, and then you can control it from a Mac or an iPad or an Android phone or something else or another iPhone and see through the camera on the camera phone and all that stuff. So it basically turns your phone into a telepresence, a little short telepresence.
It's a little
novelty
product.
It's pretty cool. Yeah, it's $150. It's a good way to learn about robotics. And then the last thing is I want to build a third-person camera rig. So we sketched this out last week, posted the kind of request for comment, got a ton of good feedback from people. I'm digging into that later this week as we're traveling, hopefully. But basically, a third-person camera rig is a pair of goggles that is attached to a camera that sits, you know, 3 to 5 feet behind you and lets you see yourself like from a third-person perspective, like you would in a video game or something like that, as you're walking around live.
What's the point of that?
It seems weird and cool. We're going to take it to Maker Faire is the hope. The goal is to build it and put it to Maker Faire. There's a cognitive dissonance thing because usually when you're walking around, you don't see yourself. But by all reports, everybody who's tried one of these things basically says after about 5 minutes, you kind of adapt to it and you become able to move like you would in say, a video game because you have much better situational awareness of what's going on around you than you do.
So imagine playing Skyrim, but instead of playing first person, you're playing third person.
Yeah.
Scrolling back.
Yeah, I mean, I understand. Yeah, I mean, I guess I get it.
Yeah, I don't know. We want to try it out. It seems it's not a terribly expensive project. It seems like it's kind of silly and fun.
Okay,
so we're gonna give it a swirl, and that'll do it for news this week. Let's hit a couple of questions and then we'll call it a show.
Emails?
Well, but we do the other one.
Emails?
You know, we don't do emails. We do
emails.
No.
Questions.
Boom. So we're recording on Tuesday. So we don't have the normal barrage of audio questions. So I'm just going to read some email questions that I asked people to send in this afternoon. Kyle says, hey, guys, not so much a question, but thanks. Oh, wait, no, that's – well, I can go ahead and read that. Your discussion about Petri Dish, the crowdsourced science funding website, inspired me to send in a proposal to them that explores the evolution of the Nepalese Himalayas. It's now live on their site. It gives the URL. It's called Raising the Roof of the World. And he put in an Easter egg for tested users. Basically, what he wants to do is go to the Himalayas and do radiological surveys on rocks to tell how old and find out more about the formations of that particular range of mountains, which is representative of a specific type of geological formation. But I thought it was cool. He's a tested reader and is doing a Petri dish thing now. So his username on the site is Chango. With two G's, Chango.
Is there an easy way for people to find that Petri dish?
Maybe I'll post it in the show notes.
Link. Okay.
But the easy way is going to be the name of the project is called Raising the Roof of the World. So you should definitely check that out.
Himalayas. It's not terribly safe.
Nepalese Himalayas.
Oh, okay.
And he's also looking for, he wasn't looking for a ton of money. It's like 30 grand to do, but it seems like good science. And he's a PhD. He's a associate professor at a school in Canada someplace. So it's a real science guy. Here's a question from Jason. My tagging of the questions did not. This is okay. I'm not going to do that one. Sorry.
Sorry, Jason.
Sorry, Jason. Well, we had four Jasons write in, so it's not necessarily that Jason. Here we go. This is from SR. SR asks, when you get to the topic of televisions, it's always the more HDMI, the better. As tech people, I would think you have surround sound systems that would require you to funnel all of your devices through a receiver first. I'm in the situation where I have a receiver with only two HDMI ports. That is fine for now with just an Xbox 360 and a set-top box. But if I want to add a Roku or something else in the future, I assume I'll be forced to upgrade or pick up a Switcher. How do you have your home theater set up to avoid this, if at all?
Yeah, I don't. I use two HDMI ports on my TV at most. One most of the time, and one if I'm someone brings over or if I plug in a MacBook or something. But I bought a receiver with the intent of needing 6 to 8 HDMI ports.
See, I'm still using an older receiver, but I have a HDMI switcher that has optical switching as well. So I pipe the HDMI and the optical into the switcher. That switcher uses an IR remote, and the Harmony controls everything.
It's an extra layer for the
Harmony. So it's an extra layer of confusion for the Harmony, but it works okay.
HDMI switchers aren't too expensive either.
No, they're like $35 for a 7-port. So it's not a bad problem. Yeah, it's not an easy – it's not a difficult problem to solve.
Yeah, it's interesting because if you're someone that takes your connection seriously, you really don't need multiple HDMI ports on your TV. What matters is how many on the receiver because you want to be able to split the sound off. I have a slightly older one as well that only has 4 ports, but not everything goes through it. Like my main Comcast box and PlayStation 3 have to go straight to the TV, and I split the sound off separately because my receiver is old enough that it won't do 3D pass through. So if I ever want to watch 3D content, I have to go straight into the TV with it, and everything else goes through the switcher.
Well, and then you're piping the audio back from the TV to the receiver with the optical?
No, I have the... So for example, on my PlayStation 3, if I want to watch a 3D Blu-ray, I have an HDMI cable that goes straight to the TV just for video.
Okay.
And then I have a separate optical sound cable that goes to the receiver.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because most TVs have this feature where they'll pass the audio from HDMI back to a receiver. But with the exception of, I think, Sony, most of the big brands channel that down to 2-channel PCM. It doesn't give you the full 5.1.
Yeah, so I mean, these days you want to get like to the newer version of the Sony receiver that I have goes from 4 HDMI ports up to 7.
Yeah.
So you can have a lot more things running through, and it'll also run 3D through there as well.
I mean, realistically though, the number of things you need hooked up to the TV, it's not that high.
So
we have a weird situation because we have a lot of set-top boxes and weird stuff like that. But
so here's the stuff that I have hooked up to my main TV in the living room. I have a Comcast cable box.
Okay.
That's one. I have PlayStation 3, mm-hmm. 2, Xbox 360, 3, mm-hmm. Apple TV, 4. I have a Wii, 5, which I never use, but it's hooked
up.
That's
a component anyway. It's not HDMI.
5. I'm just talking about things that have to go into the TV. They all go through the receiver.
Okay.
In some way, shape, or form. And a discrete DVD player, which I use for discs that are not region 1. Because I have a lot of like British DVDs and stuff that I have to go through.
And then a home theater PC, DVD right? Player.
And a home theater PC, which is also HDMI.
Yeah.
So that's like 7 or 8 things.
Yeah, that's a lot of stuff.
And that, like I said, that's why the cables back there are such a clusterfuck, because there's so many different things.
Well, especially if you're running...
Oh, and a LaserDisc player.
Font of good decisions.
And a turntable.
Okay. Well, turntable's okay, but the LaserDisc player, that's just crazy.
That was a gift.
Oh, well, okay. That's nice of someone,
yes.
I think. Josh asks... I enjoy coffee, but have to deal with a Keurig at work. Can you suggest a better but minimalist method that is quick and easy? His hometown trivia is that he's from Georgetown, Grand Cayman, Cayman Islands. Yes, the major offshore center. And has just under 600 bank and trust companies, including 43 of the 50 largest banks in the world, on about 100 square miles of land. They also have a lot of churches.
As the Keurig user at the table, I have the recommendation for this guy.
You're going to tell him to just keep using the Keurig?
No, I'm going to... Okay. Well, in a way I am, but I'm going to say, get one of those little EcoBrew reusable pods.
Yeah.
And then he can bring in whatever coffee he wants and use the machine that's right there at work, but it's actually making coffee that he could grind the beans that morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, good coffee, whatever he wants.
That's not...
And those pods are really like $10. It's EcoBrew with a K. You can go on Amazon and get it. It's a little green plastic pod. Slots right into the Keurig slot that you use the disposable pods for, and you can just wash it out when you're done, and it's good to go another day, and you can bring whatever coffee you want to have with you.
I think that's a perfectly good alternative. If you don't want to use the Keurig at all, I would say get an AeroPress and a little hand grinder or something like that. The AeroPress is a great way to make single shot cups of coffee.
I think the AeroPress is too fiddly and messy.
I
like a French press.
AeroPress is perfect. I've been using it recently, and I've gotten into a system where I can make a cup of coffee in less than 10 minutes. Perfect.
Yeah.
While making breakfast.
Yeah. It's like you get it going. It's just like the French press. Once you know what you're doing.
Yeah. I mean, you got to grind the coffee every morning. That's it.
Yeah. I know.
The, With AeroPress, though, my problem is that it doesn't make enough coffee. I can never get
that's true.
Not even a full coffee mug.
It basically fills the tested mug perfectly.
What I would do if I was this guy and use the stuff that's already there, I would get whatever coffee I would want, bring it in a little, you know, plastic tub or a bag or something that you can seal up, keep it there at work. So that's your coffee. Put a little sign on it that says, you know, no one steal my coffee.
That never works.
And just keep that little pod and just clean it out after you've used it. Very simple.
Brian, this is a Fez question. Do we want to answer a Fez question?
Yeah, not really.
I haven't played it, so.
Okay, so we'll table that. Maybe you can send an audio version in later, Brian. I'll pick one more here at random. Boy, we got a lot of questions this afternoon. This is about Apple IDs. Dan says, a bit of hometown trivia. I'm from Bemidji, Minnesota, which is also the rightful but contested hometown of Paul Bunyan. Then there's a Wikipedia article. My wife has an iPhone, and I currently have a Droid X, but we'll be switching to an iPhone shortly. Should we have separate Apple IDs, or should we use the same one to share apps? Is there a hassle with separating contacts, calendars, etc. if we use the same one? Love the podcast and the new site, and a huge thank you for getting my wife and I into Lego. Dan. So Gene and I do this. We have one Apple ID between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
It's great because we can share apps. We can share movies. We can share – I mean, we don't buy movies from iTunes, but if we did, theoretically, we could. Music, when Gina bought the Black Keys the other day, I got the same Black Keys album on my iPhone, which was nice.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you do about email and stuff that's kind of more personalized?
Well, so that's the trick. We don't use MobileMe for email. We both use Gmail.
Yeah.
So we sync all of our calendars and contacts and all that stuff through Gmail. If you want to use MobileMe to sync all that stuff, one of you will have to not use that Apple ID and we'll have to hook it up to another one.
The only problem with that is that you only get 5 gigs of shared iCloud storage.
Right. So I actually paid the $20 to get to do backups.
Okay.
I figured it was worth it.
All right. That's good. Good solution.
Very so there easy. You go. Yeah. I think use one. I think we do the same thing with Amazon with books for Kindle.
Yeah.
Because I find it kind of criminal that I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, because if I was buying DVDs, we'd both be able to use them. If I was buying books, we'd both be able to use them.
With Kindle, you read them both at the same time?
You can. You get into kind of sticky situations where the
whisper sync,
where the last saved position does weird things. But they actually just added a fix for that, because it used to be that you couldn't ever reset the last saved position of a book. Now there's actually a button on the Manage My Kindle Library page on Amazon that says reset the position in this book to the zero.
Oh, good. Very smart.
So you can start over if you want to read a book again, or if somebody on the same account as you wants to read a book. The one thing that I don't know is going to happen, and somebody asked a question about this in the forums the other day, is how digital media works when you die or get divorced or something like that. Like in the old days, you'd get divorced, you'd split up your record collection, no big deal. You know, you take one set of records, I take the other set of records.
Yeah.
Now there's no provision for that. Like, that's you can't a good question. Split iTunes stuff.
Right.
You know, if you're sharing
one person
this,
would get custody of all of it. Right?
Yeah.
I think terms of service says that when you are
when you're
expired, then your account expires.
Well, so that means that value goes away forever.
Yeah.
The other question is the divorce or
well, like, I could leave you my iTunes a password and account information in my will, right? And you would
theoretically
you would take custody of it.
I don't think you have the right to use that anymore, and you couldn't merge it with yours, so it would be a challenge to.
Yeah.
To
and this is why the companies, of course, ultimately love it. It's because
because then nothing's generational.
Yeah, that content dies with you, and someone else has to they can't just inherit it.
The other question, though, is like when you have kids. Like if you have kids, you put them on your Kindle account.
Yeah.
When they go to college, does that mean they have to rebuy all the – you know, when they leave the house and no longer on your Kindle account, do they have to rebuy all of their books separately, or is there going to be a way to split the stuff off?
Enough people need to get angry about this.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that probably is the solution, is be angrier.
Yeah.
Nasty letters to the DOJ. And that'll do it for us this week. Good show this week, guys. We will be back next week on the normal time live Thursday. In the meantime, check the site for it'll be kind of a slow week this week because we're traveling a ton. But then next week we'll have a bunch of good stuff from NAB and SCAA and back to the regular schedule. So for Gary Witt and Norm Chan, anything to plug, guys?
Do I have anything to plug? No.
I got to buy a new monitor.
Norm's got to buy a new monitor. We'll talk about that in Fake Outtakes for a little bit.
Okay.
We'll see you guys next week. Bye. Oh, today's outro comes from Barta.
Hi there. I didn't see you.
That's it.
very distracting that I can see you and also see my own reflection. Yeah, I'm fascinated by myself. Another good one.
Seems right.
I like that they're fresh every week now.
I thought about hanging a black cloth over the mirror, but I thought that might be a good idea. Too funeral-y.
It's my curse.
Yeah. Remember, you can sit on this side if you want. You can stare at Norm instead of me.
Maybe I'll do that next time.
And watch the birds, too.
You guys should watch Cabin in the Woods.
I'm going to go see it.
It's good.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's real good.
The trailers look really good.
You're not supposed to look at those, though. Don't go in cold. Yeah.
Well, I accidentally got spoiled because I didn't know I was supposed to. They got to tell you that at the start of the trailer.
No.
Why do you need a new monitor, Norm?
Because my monitor died suddenly. I was reading about the Discovery Shuttle, and then suddenly I heard the bottom.
Is that why you stopped answering my IMs midway through the day?
Absolutely.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm going to be on the lookout for a new monitor as well, so I'll be interested to see what you look at.
So I already did some preliminary research in terms of 30-inch monitors.
Is that where you want to be?
So I have a Dell 3008 right now, which came out, I think in 2008.
2008.
Yeah. It came out in 2008. And
maybe 2007, but
in around there. And it's a 30-inch monitor, 2560x1600. There's a new one, the 2011, which came out, I think, 2 years ago, 2010. And they haven't made a new one since. It is $1,300.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah.
I mean, they used to be $2,000. So I guess they've kind of gone down in price a little bit.
Well, big LCDs have gotten cheaper.
Yes. But if you go down one step, the 27-inch Dell, the U2711, is only $825.
Isn't it the same? Isn't it 2560 by like 1440?
By 1440. Right. And if you go to HP, the HP monitors are just as good image quality wise, but just don't have as many ports in terms of USB hubs, card readers, and
HDMI and DisplayPort.
Yeah, you only have one HDMI on the HP one and DisplayPort. Or maybe no, yeah, it's one DVI. Like a Dell I have right now, if it's two DVI. Like multiple HDMI and DisplayPort.
The one you have now only has one HDMI and one DisplayPort.
One HDMI, one display, two DVI,
and
a component.
Now, Dan Stapleton and others have professed this, and Will was trying to sell us on this before the podcast, idea of why not just get like a 42-inch HDTV where you'll get much more back for your buck in terms of the screen size, but
you are
going to be anchored at 1080p, which to me negates one of the great benefits of PC gaming, which is the super high resolution.
I think a HDTV is a great solution for you and a terrible solution for Norm.
I think it's a terrible solution for both of us.
I don't think it's a great solution
for
me.
You're using the PC primarily for games, right?
Yeah.
Exclusively
for games. The next PC that I build, which is going to have to include a display of some kind,
right.
Will be solely for games.
Why don't you just put it in the living room and hook it up to your TV and 5.1 sound system?
Because I have that already, but what I've realized is... For the lean forward, like for example, when the new SimCity comes out, I don't want to play that on my big screen TV.
Okay,
I want to sit
enough.
In front of a desk and play that.
And when you play SimCity, you don't want to play at 1080p.
No.
You want to play 2560.
Right.
If SimCity is any history, you're not going to be able to play that new SimCity game at anything approaching the native resolution.
Of course you are.
30-inch panel.
You absolutely
are. Because
the
CPU won't be able to keep up.
You absolutely are.
Okay.
Scaling up CPU doesn't really change that much. My decision now is whether I want to pay the extra $400. The HP monitors are cheaper. I'm leaning toward HP right now to get a 2560x1600 or if 1440 is enough. Now, you use a 2560x1440.
Yeah, so I have a 27-inch iMac, and when I was playing games through that, I loved it. And so I'd be, like you said, that last 3 inches sounds like
it's vertical inches. So it's just about how tall you can make
games,
your...
For games, it kind of doesn't matter.
When I play like full-screen YouTube video... I see black bars.
Like a good 27-inch panel sounds like the way to go.
Yeah. I think I'm going to...
And you save a ton of
money. Can you go even bigger than 30?
You cannot go...
Then you're in 1080p land.
The other story that we didn't talk about this week, maybe it wasn't that big a deal, but I did read some interesting stuff this week about how... I can't remember who they were.
So no resolution on the monitor front?
On the monitor front, I think I'm going to go with 27-inch HP plus a 20-inch. Plus a 20-inch 1080p monitor that I'm going to rotate vertically.
Does that line up right?
Doesn't matter if lines up right because all the video cards right now split.
No, I know it'll split it, but it just looks weird.
It's fine if it looks weird. I'll drag.
I mean, I want the 2560 as well because you know, now the cards are out there, like the new, this new GTX 680, I think will be able to run games in native resolution, no problems, that higher res.
Yeah. Well, my 580 does pretty well on almost everything native.
Anyway, I just think this is going to be another leap forward, because what I was reading this week is how certain display manufacturers are now looking at, you know, what we think of now as the retina level pixel density, but on these much bigger displays.
Yeah.
And we're going to be, like, I mean, you're going to be talking about insane amounts of pixels.
One of the questions that I didn't get into was somebody asking if the new generation MacBook Airs are going to have retina pixel density.
Well, that would be the next step, right? Going from, like, so we went from the iPhone screen, which is really small, to now they can do it on an iPad size screen. It's not that big a jump to the MacBook Air screens, right?
The problem is software at that point, because the desktop OSs don't scale pixel density, right?
Power. Yeah, backlight and power. I mean, 2 hours on a Mac, 4 hours on a MacBook Air, be generous. If you double the number of pixels on that, you're going to need a stronger backlight, and you're going to cut the power.
But like a 27-inch screen, but with the same pixel density that we associate with Retina, I didn't even know what the native resolution that would be, but it would be pretty insane.
Video cards can't drive. I mean, they can drive technically that many pixels, because you can put like 9, you know, 30-inch monitors next to each other,
yeah,
and still get those pixels. But you're not. I mean, desktop activities can be a little slow.
But I'm with you. And once Windows 8 is launched, I'm going to be looking at building a new PC for desktop gaming, yeah, like the lean forward SimCity WoW type stuff that I like, mm-hmm, to kind of be, you know, old fashioned office chair type gaming.
Yeah.
I got a pretty good idea what I want the specs to be, but the big unknown has been the display. So
the thing is, there's so few PC desktop monitors when you talk about in that 27 and 30 inch range.
Yeah, yeah. It's literally HP, Dell, and Samsung, I think, makes one, and there's an LG, but I don't know if they do the 2560 resolution.
And we're not gonna get higher pixel density for a long time until some other company does it. I mean, they can do it. You can take higher, the yield will just be very low,
because they'll be really expensive.
Cut the screens.
Yeah, I mean, the 30 inch panels are going away just because nobody will pay $1,300 for them. Yeah. It's much cheaper to put, you get more pixels by putting two monitors that are much lower resolution right next to each other, mm-hmm, than by paying for one $1,300 panel.
And also, you talk about like how 1080p is good enough for games, and it is when you're sitting 10 feet back on an Xbox or whatever. But if I'm sitting this far away from my computer playing SimCity or whatever, you're going to notice 1080p compared to like 2560.
I don't know. I play 1080p I play Xbox games on my desk in the office all the time, and they look bad. But when you play PC games at 1080p
I'm pretty certain that when SimCity comes out, if I put one in front of you in 1080p,
If you
one
here 2560,
you would notice the difference easily. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I want a good old fashioned PC monitor. Yep.
I'm really excited about SimCity.
And you know,
me too. It's one of the reasons why I want to get this new system.
High resolution you play at, the less AA you need to turn on. I turn AA off, actually. It helps the performance a lot. I like the Jaggies.
I just like it when you get one of those monstrously overpowered systems where you can just jack everything up to ultra, the highest resolution, and the card's like, what else you got?
Are you finally going to go back and play Skyrim then?
Well, Skyrim's a whole other issue for me, where I'm just terrified to open that door.
I
can't make the time commitment.
Plus, you want to bring someone in to customize it, to put all the mods in to improve the visuals. So the first time you play it, it's going
to
be the best.
Yeah, I mean, the next time sync for me is I'm probably going to be willing to, once Mists of Pandaria comes out, I'll be like, okay.
Oh, don't I
do kind of want to level a panda. I can see myself getting sucked back into WoW, at least for that. But that was one of those games that I had to really make a conscious decision to cut out of my life.
Yeah, it was really damaging for you, as I recall.
It was real, real bad. I played that game way too much.
Yeah. Yeah, see, I stopped before Burning Crusade even came out, really.
Yeah, you did the right thing.
Yeah, I just got bored.
I miss that. As much as I've loved the living room PC experience, I do miss the old-fashioned, because we did it for so many years, it's hard to kind of get out of that mindset, like, sitting in your little cave, you know, leaning forward with your mouse and keyboard, just glued to the screen 6 inches away from
your face.
All the
lights off in your room, and just headphones have the glow on of the monitor.
Yeah, and it's just you and the world that you're in. Like that is a whole kind of experience that is unique to the PC.
And when you're playing games that aren't console ports and don't play better with a gamepad, I'm totally down with it. Like,
I love that.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Mass Effect 2, I went back to played some of that. It is real hard to play with a gamepad. Because of the planet scanning.
It's just how I've always played it.
Yeah. But I mean, after you played the mouse and keyboard version, I saw Norm just scroll the mouse around as fast as you can and click. It's a completely different game.
Yeah.
Anyway, I guess that'll do it for us this week, unless anybody has anything else they want to fake and outtake. Chloe Bananas.
Fake outtake's pretty dry this week.
Yeah.
We're on the level.
I feel like fake outtakes, Chloe agrees. Fake outtakes has perhaps suffered from the reintroduction of bad tangents.
Well, the show has changed now that the fake outtakes are kind of baked right into the entree rather than as a spicy
right next to IKEA meatballs.
Yeah,
we need to figure out something else we can talk about in fake outtakes. It's off topic for the rest of the show.
I think we might be going to IKEA that later this week.
Well, we're going to be gone.
Well, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about me.
Well, have fun.
You don't even care. Why would I care about you when you've
I thought already you were proposing explained a field your distaste. Trip, Gary.
No, I would not waste the time. In the same way that I will never bring you any food from McDonald's ever again.
I appreciate that. That's a nice thing you're doing.
I will never
for
invite
me.
You on any IKEA food trips that we go on.
Fair enough.
Should have eaten those chicken poppers.
You should have eaten them. You knew I wasn't going to eat chicken from McDonald's. It's not even really
you.
Chicken.
I brought them for Gina.
Still haven't seen Fish McBites in the wild either. That's upset right. about that.
Some things are blessings.
I laugh because of the Gordon's fisherman joke.
Now I want some McDonald's. Oh, that was the best. Now I want some McDonald's. No, it must be good. I've got some soup at home. I'll have that for dinner.
Yeah, have something that's good for you and tasty rather than
something wholesome
McDonald's
and healthy
garbage.
And natural and organic.
Right. Okay, see you guys next week.